The meeting of the Planning Commission will come to order. And the first item is there anyone here who would like to speak to a subject that is not on the agenda? Hearing none, it's unusual for that to happen. So don't feel like we're missing anything. With that, we will go to the report items. But before I do that, I want to let everybody know we're going to pull the sunshine law off of the consent calendar. And we will hear that as a regular item. So with that, Mr. Dossie.
Well, happy 2018. Happy New Year to all of you. Hope you all had wonderful holidays. And I'm glad to see we at least have five today. So thank you for being the troopers there. Normally, we would give you the Board of County Commissioners report. There has been no action since the last report we gave, so that we're up to date on that. If I could get the overhead, please. I don't think we've ever done something like this before in the past, but I kind of think it's important this year. There's been some projects that have come before you that Planning Commission recommended one thing and Board of County Commissioners settled on something different. I think at times it felt like there was more of that happening than maybe there actually was. So I wanted to show you kind of briefly what that looks like. If we could zoom out a little bit, Nancy, please. So total for 2017, there was a total of 47 items that went both before the Planning Commission and the Board of County Commissioners. Of the 47, only four was there a difference between what you all did and what the Board of County Commissioners did. I'm not great at math, so I used a calculator. that only represents 8.5% of the time. So while at times it may seem like they're not consistent with maybe with the review that you all performed and the recommendation that you gave, really the difference is pretty minor. And of all of the items, two of those were rezonings. One was a variance, and one was the Silverado PUD / preliminary plan. So it's not like it was just one application type. I think, generally speaking, rezonings tend to be the one that maybe that happens more often than not, simply because you're talking about a compatibility analysis that occurs with somewhere between 5 and 11 people versus, you know, the same analysis being done by only 5 people at the most. So a lot of times I think those application types, maybe rezone and variance, are the two where you might see that. But generally speaking, what you all have done on your end has been very consistent with the way that the Board of County Commissioners has seen those same applications. Any questions on that?
Having said that, Mr. Dossie, maybe the County Commissioner should get some more training.
I will leave that up to the County Attorney's Office to recommend.
Yes. Ms. Dillon?
Also, Craig, I think sometimes in between...
Microphone. Do you have your microphone?
Yeah.
There you go.
I think sometimes in between the time we hear it and the time the County Commissioners hear it, there are changes.
Yeah.
That can affect that decision.
And a lot of times, I think that's a good point. And a lot of times it's not even material changes to the application as much as it is material changes to how it's presented. I think, you know, I've always said that the Planning Commission is kind of like a trial run. And it's not only a trial run for the applicant, but it's also a trial run for those that maybe are in opposition or maybe even in support. It's also a trial run for staff to some degree, too. We kind of pick up some of the keys that you're giving us. And, you know, we might change conditions of approval to better suit the application based on the feedback we get from you. But I think predominantly there's a change in the presentation by the applicant that may change the course of that application. That's a very good point. So as I said, there are only two rezonings that were that you approved that were denied by the board. Or excuse me, this is your action report. This is for all the actions you took. Of all the actions that you took, there were a total of 55 that you all heard. Only two of those were denied, recommendation for denial by the Planning Commission. I'd say that's overwhelmingly in favor of approval most of the time. Of the 55, 34 were regular and 21 consent. I would say that's probably unusual. Usually, I think we would like to see more consent, but you know, some years are just that way. You see more variances, and my personal opinion is I'm more inclined to put rezonings and variances as regular items simply because either you're changing the zoning, which that is a permanent change, or you're asking for an exception to the allowed uses in the case of a variance of use. So I certainly am more inclined to put those up as regular items. Rather than just putting them on the back burner, so to speak, as a consent item. So this gives you an idea of kind of a summary of what you all did during the course of 2017. And then today, this is your agenda. You do have now three consent items. You have the minutes from December 19th. 2017, and then you have the two Jackson Ranch filing numbers 3 and 4 final plats on your consent calendar. I do plan on doing a kind of a year in review of all the things that we've done as a department. I don't really want to do it for five people, so I will wait. It seems maybe it might have more of an impact if everybody's here. But I try to do that every year so that you understand kind of what the level of effort is from staff, from the department as a whole, because we are very busy. And I've pointed that out in the past that we're basically at pre-recession numbers, but with two-thirds of the staff. So I like kind of showing what that looks like from a staffing standpoint, and then also updating you on maybe some of the staff changes that we've had. I will also note that we do plan on having a meeting on January 16th. We have two regular items for that hearing, so we will have a meeting on that day. And then we also have your end-of-year luncheon today. So hopefully the five of you can stick around because there's going to be more than enough food.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Mr. Julia.
I just wanted to say I know we're not going to do the full year interview at this point, but looking at those numbers of what we've seen and the very high percentage of approvals that we're recommending, I think that speaks volumes to your staff as well, because that means by the time it gets to us, most of those bugs have been worked out, so there's not a whole heck of a reason for us to deny it, even though there might be some things to still discuss. So thank you for all the work you guys are doing.
I appreciate that, and just everybody in the audience hears this. We're not driving at an approval or denial. That's not the role of staff. It's to try to address issues through the review process. And if we can resolve those within the confines of the allowances in the code or the ECM, then we're going to do that to try to, you know, maybe negotiate some middle ground to work out some of the issues. But as this clearly points out, you know, we've had either a member of the Planning Commission pull items, or we've had enough input from the public that we want to put something on as a regular item. And that's the whole reason why we're here. It's part of the public process, and I'd never want to minimize that. I think it's very important that we hear the public, and particularly those that own property adjacent to whatever the application is. So any questions for me before I turn it back over?
One request that I have. Last year, you mentioned how many, the dollar amount of assets the county acquired that the county then had to maintain and everything. And I think it was 13 point some million dollars.
Sounds
worth.
Right.
And if you would do that analysis again this year, I would appreciate it.
Sure,
because I think we sometimes forget that when we're enthusiastic about approving things, that it is really expensive to maintain particularly drainage structures and roads.
Right.
And the thing that bothers me a lot is the Public Works Department have said that they don't have enough money to maintain a residential street up before its obsolescence, and that's scary. So if you can get that information and present it to us, but be sure and present it to the county commissioners, because that's a problem.
And I agree with that. I think it's easy enough to say that a final plat is approvable and actually to approve it, but as you correctly identified, there are going to be assets that are dedicated to the county that the county is responsible, legally responsible for maintaining. That's why it's really important during the construction process that we get it right and that things are built to the standard they're built to, because if they're not, that only shortens that timeline by which the county has to repair that or in some cases completely replace that improvement. That was part of the reason why we hired another inspector to inspect sidewalks. We found ourselves getting broken sidewalks after we had already gone through final acceptance. So little things like that, we're trying to make sure we cover our bases, but I think that's a very good observation. I'd be happy to produce that.
Thank you.
We can also give you the distance of linear miles of roadway that the county's accepted this year as well.
Perhaps you could get some comment from Public Works along with that when it goes to the county commissioners.
Sure, I'll edit it before it shows up here, though. knowing my counterpart at Public Works.
That's okay. Nothing the matter with a salty report.
Thank you all. Thank you again for being here today. I know we got low numbers, but you should have more than enough food, so appreciate it.
Okay. Before we go further, the voting members today will be Jane Dillon, Mr. Maston, Mr. Creeley, Mr. Joya, and myself. So we do have five, which is the minimum required for a quorum, and so we can conduct county business. And has everyone had a chance to review the minutes? Did anyone find anything they thought should be changed or corrected? Hearing none, the minutes are approved as presented. And with that, Ms. Dillon, would you be so kind to read the Sunshine Laws? Make the motion, actually. It's off the consent. It's a regular item. No, we're not doing the Sunshine Laws as a consent. We're doing it as the first regular item. And then I'll go back to the others. Okay.
I make a motion that the Planning Commission comply with the Open Meetings Law, Sunshine Law, in the following manner. During 2018, in compliance with the Open Meetings Law, CRS 24-6-401 at SWCC, the Planning Commission will post its meeting agendas in the lobby and or on the outside notice board of Centennial Hall, 200 South Cascade Avenue, Colorado Springs, Colorado. The meetings will be held in the hearing room on the second floor of the Pikes Peak Regional Development Center, 2880 International Circle, Colorado Springs, Colorado, or other designated location as may be required. On the second Tuesday of the month, beginning at 9 a.m., or on an as-needed basis. The Planning and Community Development Department, as recording secretary to the Planning Commission, is appointed to be the custodian of the official minutes and records of the Planning Commission's meetings. The audio recording is hereby designated as the official record of meetings. The audio recording of executive sessions is hereby ordered, except for attorney-client privileged communications. the official newspapers for publication of required notices shall be the same newspapers that are used by the Board of County Commissioners of El Paso County.
Thank you, Ms. Dillon. Is there a second?
Second.
Mr. Greeley, second. And I'll go through the vote.
Before the vote, Mr. Chairman,
yes.
Make a comment. It sounded like it said that the meeting times will be the second Tuesday of each month.
That's what it says on here. I was a little surprised.
I think we need to amend that, Mr. Chair.
Oh, yes. All right.
So I move to amend the motion to say that the meetings will be on the first and third Tuesdays of each month as needed.
Exactly.
Okay. Is there a second to the amendment?
Second.
Second. But from Mr. Greeley. And we'll vote on the amendment. Mr. Gioia?
Aye.
Mr. Greeley?
Aye.
Mr. Mastin?
Aye.
Ms. Dillon?
Aye.
And the chair votes aye. With that amended, we will vote on the motion as amended. Mr. Gioia?
Aye.
Mr. Greeley?
Aye.
Mr. Mastin?
Aye.
Ms. Dillon?
Aye.
And the chair votes aye. So the Sunshine Law is approved as amended. And with that, we will go into the consent items and the question. We have a final plat on Jackson Ranch, filing number 3, and final plat on Jackson Ranch, number 4. Is there any members of the Board of County Commissioners who would like to hear either of those as a regular item? Is there anyone in the audience who would like to hear either of those as a regular item? Hearing no interest in that, Chair will entertain a motion, and we can do a motion on both of those and have one vote on the two of them.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Mr. Gioia.
In regards to consent item number 2C, that's SF17-017, Jackson Ranch filing number 3, final plat, I move for approval under the new standard resolution, page 19, with 11 conditions and two notations, with a finding of sufficiency for water quality, quantity, and dependability. And on item 2D, SF17-016, Jackson Ranch filing number 4, final plat, I move for approval under the new standard resolution, page 19, with 11 conditions and two notations, and a finding of sufficiency for water quality, quantity, and dependability.
Is there a second?
Second.
Mr. Creeley has seconded that. Any discussion? Any discussion from the audience? Hearing none, we will go ahead with the vote. Mr. Gioia?
Aye.
Mr. Creeley?
Aye.
Mr. Mastin?
Aye.
Ms. Dillon?
Aye.
And the chair votes aye. So the two action items, SF17-17 and SF17-16, have been approved. And with that, we will move on to the Larson Ranch East, which is PUD SP16-003, a PUD action.
Good morning, Planning Commission.
Morning.
Happy New Year. Carrie Parsons with Planning and Community Development. Before you today, we have a combined planned unit development plan and preliminary plan, file number PUD SP16003. It's named the Larson Ranch East development. Myself and Jeff Rice were the staff members who reviewed the application. And the criteria for approval, I believe the county attorney's office is going to read both the criteria for the planned unit development and the preliminary plan approval criteria.
morning, Commissioners. There are quite extensive criteria for approval here. It's all in your backup material, so I'll try to paraphrase the extent I can so I don't bore everyone to death. Conformity with the Master Plan and Land Development Code, preservation of health, safety, welfare, harmony with the surrounding neighborhood and environment. Application it considers and addresses potentially detrimental uses associated with that application. Appropriate allowed uses for the type of development involved. Preservation of historic, cultural, aesthetic, natural features. Integration of open space and trails. No overburdening of roads or public facilities. The development benefits from interconnected open space, aesthetic value, harmony, and energy efficiency. And number 10, the exceptions or deviations are warranted. As to the exceptions or deviations are concerned, there are two that are being requested as part of this application. That includes spacing of trees being planted as well as intersection spacing. And there are specific LDC requirements as far as those are concerned. The Planning Commission would have to find that the proposal provides for the general health, safety, and welfare of the citizens and at least one of the following benefits: preservation of natural features, provision of a more livable environment, such as the installment of street furniture, decorative street lighting, or decorative paving materials, provision of a more efficient pedestrian system, provision of additional open space, provision of other public amenities not otherwise required by the code, or the proposed modification is granted in exchange for the open space and or amenity designs provided in the PUD development plan and or development guide. Are there any questions I can answer so far?
I'm not hearing any.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
In that case, moving on to the preliminary plan criteria. Again, conformance with the master plan and land development code, subdivision design standards, water sufficiency is adequate. An established sewage system has been provided. Identification of hazardous soil or topographical conditions that are addressed as part of the plan. Adequate drainage improvements are provided. Legal and physical access is provided. Compatibility by way of coordinating with natural features, fostering implementation of county plans, encouraging a balanced transportation system, incorporating adjacent uses via physical design features, incorporating environmentally sensitive areas, and incorporating public infrastructure. Necessary services, again, would be provided as far as public services are concerned and meets applicable fire protection standards. And that's all I have, sir.
All right. Any questions? Thank you very much.
Okay. Staff notified 47 adjacent property owners for both today's hearing and the Board of County Commissioner hearing, which is anticipated to be scheduled on January 23rd. The notification was sent out December 14th of last year. We did receive two responses. The responses have been handed out to you today at the hearing, and they will be attached to the Board of County Commissioners packet. In general, there was a concern that one of the property owners had been told they were purchasing a premium lot and development was not going to occur behind them. And the other response was overall a feeling of a lack of community involvement in the design of the proposed PUD development. The project is owned by multiple Lorson LLC nominees. In addition, since the time that the staff report was drafted, the official transfer has occurred from El Paso County to Whitefield School District Number 3. So the school district does own the 25-acre school site identified in the PUD. However, the assessor's database does not reflect that ownership yet. They're doing their annual update, and so it will when they're done with their update. The owner's consultant is here to do a brief PowerPoint presentation for you, and that's Thomas & Thomas with Jason Allwine.
Thank you. Good morning. I'm Jeff Mark with the Land House Company. We're the property owner. I'm going to let Jason give his brief presentation, and then I'll add a few things on top of that for your information. Yes, we're signed in. I'm Jeff Mark with Land House Company. This is Jason Allwine with Thomas & Thomas.
Good morning, Commissioners. Happy New Year. As Carrie and Jeff mentioned, my name is Jason Allwine with Thomas & Thomas. We're the planner for the project. We are here today to discuss the Lorison Ranch East. On your screen is majority of the Lorison Ranch development, which has been going on for probably 11 or 12 years now. What you see in the middle is primarily built existing Lorison Ranch development to the southwest. Recently, last year, was the Carriage Meadows South project. We just submitted a final plat for this Carriage Meadows North. So this is a continuation of the Lorison Ranch development moving eastward across the East Tributary. This was the approved sketch plan amendment from 2016. The site is highlighted in red, indicating that it is zoned and approved for the use of RLM and RM. It's residential low, medium, residential medium. Essentially allows a DU of 4 to 6 DUs, as well as up to a 7 to 10 DUs per acre. As you'll see in a moment, we're about half of the allowed density. But just wanted to highlight we are in conformance with the existing sketch plan on file. This is the proposed PUD and preliminary plan under consideration today.
Can I interrupt you just for a moment, Mr. Chair? Just for the sake of the people in the audience who don't know all your acronyms, could you? Yeah, I know you said DUs, that's development units, right?
Yes. Okay. Thank you for that. It's a good question. So DUs is development units, and AC is acre. So when we say density, it's 4 to 6 dwelling units per acre. That's the approved density on the sketch plan. The Lorison Ranch East site in particular will round up to 275 acres. That does include the 25-acre school site, as well as a 17-acre future development parcel. We included that for sort of overall green utilities, but this future parcel will come in later with a prelim plan and a full design when we get there. We are proposing over the 275 acres, 826 dwelling units for a density of 3.01 dwelling units per acre. As you can see, it's quite a bit lower than the approved density from the sketch plan. Kind of run you through the site. This is the existing Jimmy Camp Creek East Tributary. As part of this project, there will be some improvements to the northern section. There's been quite a bit of improvements already through the central section of the channel. We will be providing two bridge connections to the existing Lorison Ranch development to the west along Fontaine Boulevard, as well as Lorison Boulevard. Those will be our two main access points across the existing creek. With the site, we do have a couple constraints. There is an existing power line easement that sort of runs in a northeasterly direction that will remain, as well as the existing SDS easement that runs north-south. This was quite a constraint, as we could cross it with roadways and utilities in the roadways. However, we had to maintain most of the grade across that because of blow-off valves, depth of pipe, and so forth. And we worked closely with CSU to ensure that our design and layout did, in fact, meet their requirements. And to date, with a few technical kind of comments and questions that we've worked with them, they've had no issue with our design. We do have the future school site, total open space. We'll get to that in just a second. Here's an open total open space as required with the PUD. Of the 225 acres, we're required to have 27.46 acres. We're providing a total of 53.82 acres. As you can see, about half of that is the Jimmy Camp Creek corridor. The remaining half, or 27 acres, is shown throughout in sort of the green, shaded or green colored. We are providing some soft surface trails along the creek corridor, as well as we propose along the SDS. We can do that based on CSU comments. We can provide kind of a soft surface trail through that. Working with the Parks Department, we've identified up to three sites for kind of a playground equipment area. One of those is going to be somewhere in this vicinity, a second one down in here, and the third one down in the southern portion of the site. We'll work with the Parks Department closely as these as developed. This is a long-term, probably a multi-year phasing and platting. So as we work with the different plat filings and phases, we'll work with the Parks Department to ensure we get those the park sites located appropriately. As mentioned earlier, we do have a PUD modification for landscaping along Fontaine Boulevard. We're requesting, the code is required one tree per 20 linear feet. We're requesting to change that to one tree per 30 linear feet. What that does is reduces the tree requirement from 152 to 110. And as you can see, what is shown is what we're proposed for the landscape. So even though we're asking for a reduction of 42 trees, it's still quite a bit of landscape provided along Fontaine Boulevard within the landscape setback. And then also we're providing landscape along Lorson Boulevard, which is a collector. Just run through some of the approval criteria. We do meet the goals, objectives, and policies of the master plan, the existing sketch plan. It does meet the purposes of this code. It is general conformance with the sketch plan as well as follows the precedent and the guidelines in existing development, existing Lorson Ranch to the west of us, similar size lots, similar size setbacks, building heights, fencing materials, and so forth. We do have water and wastewater provided through the Whitefield Water and Sanitation District. Fire will be provided, I believe it's Security Fire Department. Drainage and grading criteria will be met through the state as well as through the local ECM criteria. What's going on here? And with that, free to answer any questions you might have.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Joya.
Just one question for me. Glossed over pretty quickly. Why fewer trees?
A couple reasons for that. One, out here water is a concern. Even though it is drip irrigation, it does require some water. Two, as you can see with the design, even at 110 trees, these are shown at about 70% mature. That's kind of what we look for. Still pretty packed. If we were to add additional 42 trees in there, I mean, it gets really tight, and then it just kind of get crowded out. And we felt even at reduction, it's still a pretty substantial amount of trees and a landscape treatment along Fontaine Boulevard. And it also follows with existing approvals and what we've done throughout the Lorson Ranch with the reduction in trees along some of these collectors and arterials.
Any other questions, Mr. Mastin?
The reduction in the intersection sizes, what's the reason for reducing all of those?
Good question. So I can go to, so this graphic was done in February of 2017. There is one change I will get to, we'll discuss in a second. They're twofold. Two requests. One is to reduce a residential local intersection from 175 to 165. That location is here, 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 and here. There's five of those. Seven of those, and that is because of there's not a required 10-foot landscape along these trees. So, in our lot depth of 110 center line with our lot depth, it comes up to 165. That's what we've asked for, that 10-foot reduction from a residential local standpoint. The other intersection spacing proposed modification is along the collector. Per discussion with staff, 660 is the number we need to hit along this collector from this is Fontaine and this is Lamprey to this first residential local. We're at 561 feet. That's down from 660. And as you can see with our intersection spacing, it's close to 660, a little short, but we had to give some access points to the school site as well, and this one came a little short. Along Fontaine, we've also asked for two requests to lower that 660 down, primarily from constraints. We have SDS easement here and the power line easement here. So to space our collector space at 660 is just difficult to do. We've asked for a reduction from 660 to 550 from this residential local to this collector, as well as a residential local here to this collector. This graphic was done again in February 2017 and shows 575. Since then, we've moved this intersection on this graphic intersection shown here, we've moved this over about four lots, and the new request is for about 376 feet. The reason we've asked for to push that west and slightly lower there is a couple of reasons, primarily related to grading and drainage. As I mentioned, we have this SDS easement that runs north-south. It might be easier to go to this color graphic right here. So we have a parallel road that follows Lorson Boulevard. It's called Thacko Drive. It's approximately 7 feet lower than Lorson Boulevard. And we have to maintain this grade because there's a blow-off right here of SDS that we cannot move. And currently, everything wants to drain to the north. The farther west we move our local roadway connection, the closer we get to grade. We do not want any drainage from Lorson Boulevard to drain north into our local residential streets. So from an engineering standpoint, the farther west we can move this, the better off we are. And where we've shown is about Lorson and Thacko being at grade, and it helps us with our kind of our drainage and utility connections.
I would just also add that these deviations and access points have been vetted out with the staff, including the county engineer. So we've had to provide traffic memos and data to support these deviations.
There's a lot of information. Hopefully I answered your question.
Hey, it did. I just wanted to make sure that just with the reduction in size is that we're not going to have a point in the future where stuff is going to have to be expanded to accommodate the amount of traffic or access for this.
Yeah, additional traffic. We also, particularly on Fontaine Boulevard, will have notes on our PUD prelim plan as well as our plats that allow for, without the county having to pay for the right-of-way, if the road needs to be widened in the future, that right-of-way will be effectively set aside for future dedication.
Okay. And that Fontaine Road is this one right here.
Okay. Yep. Mr. Chair, can I ask one more question?
Yes, Mr. Mastin.
With this plan, what was the status of all of this in 2015, in the summer of 2015?
2015, we were laying this out as far as the lot layout. The street networks, for the most part, have been in place for some years, meaning back to about 2005, 2006. Some of the road classifications were changed over the last 2 to 3 years based on overall build-out, meaning overall density. At one point, I believe our max density was 6,900 units. And now with the traffic study, when we did our amendment to the sketch plan, we're in the 40-some hundred range. And so because of that lack of density comparatively to what the original was, those road classifications changed to some extent just based on pure traffic volume and trip generation.
But I just want to clarify that this was on record in the summer of 2015 that this would be developed, correct?
This has been on record since 2005, 2006, yes.
Okay.
I think I noticed you one slide that you had the existing development and this new development where you show open space on both. I thought I saw that fly by. Do you have one that also includes the existing to the west?
While Jason's pulling that up, I'll just add, we have two creeks. We have the main tributary of Jimmy Camp Creek. We have the east tributary. East tributary is what we'll be doing creek improvements within this area for. We expect to have a CLOMAR, otherwise a FEMA approval here in the coming weeks to do this floodplain, the floodplain improvements, including the two bridges where I have the cursor here and the cursor here. So we'll be doing two bridges. We had a density cap based on our current access point, which is Fontaine Boulevard, of I believe 1,750 units. We have about 300 more units to go. That was generally between the creeks. When we build these two bridges, that will be in conjunction with all of the on-site work we do to bring on approximately 300 lots over here. After we bring on 300 lots in this general area, then we'll have to have this bridge installed to achieve any higher density within Lorson East, which is, of course, what you're reviewing today.
And the reason I asked for this to be brought up, as I recall, when we've heard issues related to the existing development, a lot of the homeowners have complained
as I recall, about not having enough open space and places for recreation and all that. And it seems like you have a higher percentage of open space on this east development than was on the western part. Is that correct or incorrect?
Well, I don't know the exact percentages. What I can tell you is from day one, before we gave any open space within internal to any given subdivision, we already had 70 acres between the creeks, our northern boundaries, and generally the creeks, but we had 70 total acres out of the 1,400 acres, which will always be open space. So we have trail corridors between the main tributary of Jimmy Camp Creek, the east tributary, our northern boundary up here. So there's, even again, excluding any other open space we provide within each, plat or PUD prelim plan, which we have a lot with the SDS and this power line easement and stuff along the east tributary, at minimum, into perpetuity, we had 70 from day one, 70 acres.
And the two new bridges that you're putting in, and actually there'll be a third one later on, is there, what kind of pedestrian use and bicycle use do those bridges
support? Yeah, those will have sidewalks.
Okay. Those are the questions.
We'll also have access along the creek itself for whether you want to drive, ride a bicycle or use it as a jogging or walking trail.
All right. Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Joya.
Along the same lines, do you know the measurements from the back of the pre-existing lots to the back of the new lots that you have, what that distance is?
I believe you're asking from this general vicinity to this general
Correct.
Vicinity. I think it's around 300 feet. It's
okay.
quite a long ways.
Any other questions? I'm not hearing any.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. So the applicant, as they went over, specifically is requesting 826 single-family residential lots, public roads, the 25-acre school facility tract, and then that 17-acre future development tract next to it. And then there's 30 additional tracts to be utilized for drainage, easements, utilities, and public improvements, also landscaping and general open space. In accordance with Section 4.2.6E of our Land Development Code, a PUD may be approved as a preliminary plan if requested. The applicant is also requesting pre-development site grading approval with this request, and they are also asking for a finding of water sufficiency for the entire 826 single-family residential development. Briefly, the PUD modifications, the first one Jason went over in detail, which is a modification of our landscaping requirements in section 6.2.2B1. Staff discussed the issues involving that modification with the director as required by our code. The director does need to make a recommendation to the Board of County Commissioners regarding this. Fontaine Boulevard is anticipated to be a arterial sometime in the future. However, that time is unknown due to the average daily trips anticipated with the Lorson development. Staff has worked with the developer, and the developer will be constructing Fontaine to a collector status. A collector road status does not require the 20 trees, one tree per 20 feet. It requires one tree per 30 linear feet, so staff did not have concerns with the PUD modification at this time. In terms of the PUD modification for the Section 2.3.2 of the Engineering Criteria Manual, Jeff Rice, our review engineer, is going to talk in great detail about that in his section of the PowerPoint. So I'm going to skip over that so that Jeff can do a thorough job since he's the engineer. Is that okay?
Yes.
As the county attorney read into the record, these are the one of the benefits that the board has to find to approve the PUD modification. So again, preservation of natural features, more livable environment, efficient pedestrian system, additional open space, public amenities not otherwise required, and then there is a PUD modification can be granted for an exchange in open space or other design amenities. So overall, this is the Lorson Ranch boundary. This is the existing Pleasant Valley subdivision, and it's rural residential. This is the old closed golf course here. Here we have half-acre lots, and we are in this area of the overall Lorson Ranch, the power line, and then the SDS easement, Southern Delivery System, comes north-south here. A little background, the first sketch plan was actually submitted in 2003 and approved by the board in March of 2004. That sketch plan did identify development in this area at a much higher density, as the applicant did state. The overall PUD, the concept plan, vetted that sketch plan, and that was done in November of 2006. And then there were some minor amendments to the sketch plan, essentially swapping school sites, lowering road classifications such as Fontaine, establishing various access points, and the applicant did mention that as well. So here's that overall 2006 plan. We're in this neck of the woods. And then today's approved sketch plan, you'll see that the school site is removed from here. It's over here now. And then the school site that was here is no longer on the plan. And the densities are a bit lower in this area. This is an overall of the proposed PUD plan. I know in your staff report, the match lines are very difficult to read on those 8.5 by 11, so I wanted to provide you a visual of the entire PUD. Staff's analysis, staff did find that the Lorson Ranch East PUD is compliant with our land development code, except as where requested the PUD modifications. Staff did also find that the preliminary plan did meet our criteria, again, if those PUD modifications are approved. Additional analysis, the overall density of 3.55 dwelling units per acre is consistent with the sketch plan. The 25-acre school site tract and the 17-acre future development tract are not included in staff's density calculation. In the applicant's letter of intent, they did include that, but I wanted to show you the difference there because it does change the numbers. Again, the finding of consistency was made with the policy plan at the time of the Lorson Ranch sketch plan amendment in 2016.
Before you leave that slide, do we know anything about what's going to happen on that 17-acre future development tract?
Not yet. They have not submitted an early assistance application at this time to discuss where they want to go with that, and they have not submitted a PUD application or preliminary plan. But if we refer to the sketch plan, going backwards, it's currently eligible for low-density residential development. So if they were going to go outside of the low-density residential development, they would have to amend the sketch plan potentially and also submit the PUD preliminary plan and then final plat.
Okay. And so there's no proposal or thought of that it would be commercial?
Not at this time, and that would not be consistent with the approved sketch plan.
Okay. Anybody else have questions? We've been getting a lot of information here. Okay, please continue.
A little bit in reference to the small area plan or the Highway 94 comprehensive plan. Specifically, this northern portion of this development is in the Colorado Center subarea. I did have a very detailed discussion in the staff report regarding this. And overall, the plan recommends three recommendations in the plan. The first two really are not applicable to this development. The third bullet point, that within unincorporated areas of the subarea, 5-acre densities are recommended. 35-acre densities are recommended east of Jimmy Camp Creek. Once city properties are developed, 5-acre density should be accommodated east of Jimmy Camp Creek. Staff's analysis identified, again, that the first two were not applicable. The city industrial and residential areas have not been developed in this area. And this is not a county enclave, so therefore the first two bullet points really not applicable. The approval of the first Lorson Ranch sketch plan and subsequent concept plans changed the character of that area. And additionally, near the time of the sketch plan in 2006, central water and central sewer extensions were provided to this area, which would encourage urban development versus the rural development on well and septic. So that may explain to the separation between what is now being developed out there and what was written in the Highway 94 comprehensive plan. Any questions on that?
No, I recall when you talked about that in the information that the initial thought was that would be developed in a way that later would be annexed into the city. And then when water and wastewater was, it said, well, gee, we can go ahead and do it in the county. Again, the only problem with that is the ability of the county to maintain all the assets that are dedicated to them. Because the county tax situation is the same whether it's in the city or whether it's in the county. The only difference is they don't get any help from the city. And so we do need housing for people. And it's unfortunate that the city hasn't stepped up to provide, meet that requirement. So that's just my
comment acknowledged.
Yeah, my little preaching, sorry.
I'm going to ask Jeff Rice to go ahead and take up the PowerPoint so he can discuss the engineering requests for the PUD modifications.
Morning, Commissioners. Jeff Rice with Engineering. So picking back up on the request for modification, this screen here, sorry, it's kind of hard to read. It's just a clip of the section on the face of the PUD on the modifications for the trees and then the local streets, urban local residential streets, and Jason covered that pretty well in his slide. I have a map that kind of circles those intersections here in a second, and then the PD modification for the spacing along collectors on Lorson and Fontaine. I'm sorry, Fontaine, Lorson Boulevard. So here's the map that Jason had. I just put some circles on there to clarify. The blue circles are the local spacings that Jason identified. And these orangish circles are the collector spacings. These two purple circles along Fontaine Boulevard are locations where in the future those accesses could become right in, right out as Fontaine Boulevard expands to be a four-lane road if it does in the future. And as the applicant did mention, those have been discussed with the county engineer and have been acceptable to her.
Jeff, are there any signalized intersections in this?
Not in this. There is, I'll get to it in a few minutes, but there's a roundabout proposed that, which could have potentially been a signal at Fontaine and Lamprey, but it's being proposed as a roundabout at this point, just since the development is still growing to avoid, basically you can put the roundabout in and it will serve the area for a long time rather than putting a stop-controlled intersection and having to come back and put a signal at some point. And that's right next to that school site as well, so that's one of the concerns. So this is a map that the applicant's traffic engineer provided. It shows the proposed classifications, Fontaine Boulevard being a principal arterial and then constructed as an interim collector type of
road slash kind of like a minor arterial collector hybrid type of thing. And then on Lorson Boulevard, it's being constructed as a kind of, again, a modified collector, more than a residential collector, but less than an urban non-residential collector. So it's a little bit wider to accommodate the amount of traffic that will be going through this area.
I do have one question. Mm-hmm. What is going on both east and west on Fontaine Boulevard that would cause traffic counts to go up?
At this point, on the east side, the uses are as in the approved Lorson sketch plan, which would be mostly residential. Mm-hmm. That could change, and then long term in the future, when Meridian Road is extended along the eastern boundary of this property, there could be additional uses that we haven't anticipated yet. When, as just the county grows, there could be more traffic that uses Fontaine Boulevard in the future.
Okay. So it does have the potential of being a fairly high traffic count.
Right, especially once Meridian Road gets connected. Yeah.
All right. But Lorson Boulevard really wouldn't be in that situation.
Right. It's kind of just for serving the development, and we'll connect from Mark Shuffle down on the southwest and then loop up to Fontaine and then up to the north end of the development. So it isn't going to go all the way over to Meridian like Fontaine Boulevard does.
Thank you. Did you have a question?
Mr. Chair. Excuse me. So I know you're saying that that staff has looked over these distances and said probably not much of a problem. You don't foresee, especially with the fact that, you know, they go different directions and left turns in and out, there being potential traffic jam issues because of such short areas there?
Not really. The traffic study that was provided shows most of the traffic is going to be coming from the west, so the left turns will be kind of to the north. Okay. Traffic coming from the east most likely isn't going to be destined to go to the residential lots in this location, at least for a long time potentially. Okay. So those left turns aren't going to be as much of a conflict going westbound to southbound.
Okay.
So those were the things we looked at on those okay. kinds of turns.
If the school site is developed, would that be most likely an elementary school or an elementary middle school combination, or do we know?
I think it was elementary and middle school combined.
Okay. And would that serve a large population?
I believe they had, was it 500 students?
The reason I'm asking that question is when I drive around town, when school is starting or school is getting out, there's an enormous number of cars parked because parents are delivering and then retrieving their children. And
and we have been talking with the district about those kinds of issues and how they how their access off of Fontaine mainly would be handled during those peak hours.
Okay. It's definitely a little peak phenomena.
Right.
But it seems like we have trouble getting it right.
Yeah, and that's one of the benefits with the roundabout, as well as the traffic will flow as long as the accesses aren't interfering with the actual roundabout. It's not going to be a stop condition with people having to wait to go in and out on those type of locations.
Okay. Ms. Dillon?
Thinking about the school, where will they be collecting from? I mean, yes, from the west. Is there any development going on east that this school might collect from?
I couldn't answer that. I'm guessing that as their population grows, they could bus students in. They do have a plan for busing, yeah.
Which could drastically change. Right now you're saying going west and turning south is low volume.
Right.
With the school there, even if it's just pulling from the west, you're going to have more volume.
Right.
When they're returning back to their homes or returning to go on to work or whatever,
yeah.
That's going to change your volumes quite a bit.
Right. And that'd be kind of a long-term concern, which in the future, if that much traffic actually occurs and Fontaine is expanded, it would become a separated median, so anybody that's going from the school that wants to go west would have to go through the roundabout to go back to the west.
Oh, okay.
Or go to Lamprey and then turn, go through the roundabout that way. So it's it could happen once develop happens more to the east, but that's really long-term, probably like 2060 type of time frame.
Yeah, because that school could change things.
Right.
But that would all be managed by Fontaine.
Right. And we do have a preliminary site plan for the school that we were working with the applicant for Lorson and the school together to make sure things are going to line up right when the school comes in, but there's no actual submittal yet. So. Okay.
Thank you.
Sure. So again, this map shows also the local roads and the very minor local roads, those green roads. I think we've covered most of these items. It was mentioned by the applicant that the landscape tracks, we do have a condition of approval, and there will be, there's a note on the PD, and there will be on plats that if the county or another developer or somebody needs to widen Fontaine Boulevard or Lorson Boulevard, or we do need an extra turn lane that we weren't anticipating, the landscaping tracks will transfer, or whatever portion needs to be used will transfer to the county without actual right-of-way purchase. It would be just transferred from the district to the county at that point. And again, that's kind of a long-term concern that we had. So it's covered. It could affect the landscaping, but the district would still maintain whatever landscaping remains in those areas. This map, our presentation was a different order before yesterday, but this map shows where that roundabout is at Fontaine and Lamprey Drive. We've discussed that pretty much already. And then as far as drainage and floodplain, I think this was covered pretty well. Also is Jimmy Camp Creek East Tributary. There is a conditional letter of map revision under process between the applicant's engineers and FEMA to get the approved or the design of the channel improvements approved, which is basically drop structures and some bank stabilization. It's not a whole reconstruction of that whole channel. This is north of Fontaine. South of Fontaine, they pretty much reconstructed the whole channel down to the south and where it turns to the west. And that work is mostly done through that area and been actually accepted as a letter of map revision showing that floodplain in the channel through FEMA at that point.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Julia.
This is something that I definitely plan to ask based on what was said about the roads. Could you go back to the map real quick? Okay, that's fine. That map's fine. So there was talking about the plane going from Fontaine, or I'm sorry, is it from Lorson North or from Fontaine North? There's a 7-foot drop, basically a grade downgrade.
From Lorson Boulevard to
Wallapa or whatever.
Seiko is this line here.
And part of the reason on constructing roads was over that. Well, the grade still exists there, and if that water is going down into those roads and that neighborhood there, how is it getting out? What are we looking at as potential? I know this isn't a final plat. I know we don't have all of that yet, but it's something that's been a serious problem in the out east for us.
Right. And we do have a preliminary drainage report and master development drainage report that we've been reviewing. And those show that there's some storm drains that are being installed in pretty much this whole development that would pipe the flows to the west. So those drain to the west. Yeah.
Okay.
And the bridges are pretty much been covered. There will be two bridges initially, and then over the east tributary, and then in the future, that second bridge on the south side where Lorson crosses the main Jimmy Camp Creek channel will be required to for the additional density in the future on the east side of the development. So the Jimmy Camp Creek drainage basin does have fees which will be paid, or this development has credits due to the channel improvements that have been done previously, so those will be accounted for at the final plats. I mentioned the MDDP and preliminary drainage report that have been reviewed. Those the proposed drainage design will also use some off-site ponds that are going to be along the east side, kind of under the power line easements is what's proposed, to reduce some of the flow that actually gets down to the creek. So when the actual developed flows that get down to the creek get there, it's going to be approximately at historic rates. The east tributary will be maintained by the district, as well as the detention and water quality facilities. And then the county will inherit the storm drainage system through the roads and going to the ponds for county maintenance. The, as has been listed, the early grading or pre-development site grading has been requested. So as soon as this project, assuming it gets approved, then the developer will be able to grade the site. I do want to add condition number 11 regarding detention of water quality ponds. Sorry for the late addition, but this, I guess the concern is that the, like I mentioned, those off-site ponds that are to the east, and then even potentially, depending on how the final plats come in, there could be a downstream pond that's not within a plat. So we just want to make sure, since those properties that aren't within whatever plat we're going to review aren't within that plat, that we have a condition that will require, and I'll read this, applicant and Larson Ranch Metro District shall provide a detention basin, water quality, BMP maintenance agreement, and easement for each off-site pond at the time of construction of each basin BMP is necessary to mitigate developed flows from development of any final plat within the Larson Ranch East PUD / preliminary plan.
Shouldn't it say as necessary? As opposed to is necessary?
Right here.
Yeah.
Yeah, as necessary.
So.
And I think this of can be stricken too. The construction at the time. No, that's right. At the time construction of each basin BMP is, I think is right then. All right, that's a long
provided.
Maintenance agreement easement for each offsite pond at the time construction of each basin is necessary to mitigate developed flows. I think is correct.
The verb
Sorry.
Already is.
Yeah.
The verb was already further back.
Okay. Yeah.
Sounds like is a stronger
okay.
statement.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. Okay.
English.
Then I just had some pictures of the roundabout and kind of design of Larson Boulevard, and then a Google image. If there's any other questions, I can answer those.
Any further questions? Hearing none, I think we'll probably take a 5-minute break at this point in time.
Thank you, sir.
Try to do that once an hour, and we're a little bit over. So 5 minutes, and we'll be back.
We'll come back to order.
We'll come back to order. Go ahead. Are you?
That concludes staff's presentation, unless there are any questions from any of the commissioners.
Are there any questions that haven't been answered, Mr. Master?
Yeah, just one question. When for the development, there were notices put out to the neighbors to the west to kind of get their input, I guess, on the development. What are the limitations as far as the people that were on the south border of the development? Were they notified? Were notices sent to them to get their input?
The adjacent property notifications are actually the immediate properties. Actually adjacent to the legal description. So because there is approximately 274 linear feet from the property boundary, and then this is the Larson Ranch development that is not included in this PUD, to the subdivision to the south, those people would not have been notified.
Okay, 274 feet is that's the limit, or that's the requirement?
No, the requirement is if you have a lot line, the common lot line, that person would get notified.
So who owns the property on that south edge down there where that street is?
Larson owns this, okay. Larson nominee, and that is not included in this application. let me use the sketch plan. It's easier to show. So this area in here, you'll see Lorison Road shown on the sketch plan. So the land between Lorison Road and the subdivision to the south, that is not included in this request. Therefore, this land was not adjacent. Therefore, those folks were not notified. However, we have a very good working relationship with some of the residents in that area. And so I had some direct dialogue and actually sent some screenshots via text to a couple residents out there. So,
just a question, just for clarity, because I think this is going to come up here pretty quick. How did you choose the residents to send that information to versus the other residents? And then the question I guess I'm trying to understand is that that gap where that street is, I mean, when you look at the sketch plan, the boundaries on the sketch plan border those neighbors to the south, but you're saying because there's no planned houses that are going to be put into the south side of that southernmost, can you go back one? That southernmost street, because no houses are going to be built there, that determined the requirement that you didn't have to notify the residents on the south part?
No. What determines the requirement is the legal description that is being rezoned before you today as requested. The legal description of the PUD application literally stops right here. So I'm going to go to the PUD now because that's it literally stops here. This land down here, this land, that is not in this PUD request. Therefore, the adjacent property is owned by Lorison nominee.
Okay.
I would remind the Planning Commission that all of the applications and all of the notifications, the letters of intent, staff reports, that's all public information now thanks to our EDARP system. So the public from anywhere in the world, even Hawaii, has the ability 24 hours a day to look at all of this information and, of course, provide comment to staff via a phone call, text, or facts are just coming in to discuss this. So,
okay. Anything else? Well, this is a public hearing, and the purpose of a public hearing is to let anyone who wants to comment on this have an opportunity for them to do so. So what we'll do is we'll start first with, is there anyone in the audience who wants to speak in favor of this action? Now, is there anyone here who would like to speak in opposition? Sir, come on forward. What we ask you to do is to sign in over at the podium and then clearly state your name. And then you can use either that podium or the overhead projector.
I don't even know if I'll have to use the microphone.
Okay.
Pretty loud voice.
Well,
my name is Chris Caddock. And thank you very much for that.
What we do is we like you to use the microphone because that makes it on the record.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Chris.
My name's Chris Paddock, and I thank you for your question. I live in the property closest to the development on Heritage Road, that property that you were talking about. Kind of behind the eight ball here because they've had over a year to do their work, and I've had 17 days. I live in Peaceful Valley Lake Estates on Heritage Road, right by the power lines, and had I not been contacted by your department, and I thank you very much for that, I would not have known this. And I understand that all this is on the internet and all that, but most people don't, because it's new, don't even know that. Lorison Ranch has been in the development works for over 10 years, and those 10 years have been very contentious with the landowners that live in Peaceful Valley. It is very hard for me to understand that a requirement of just distance would be the legal status to inform people that live adjacent, because dust doesn't stop at 274 feet. Noise pollution doesn't stop at 274 feet. Population densities don't stop at 274 feet. animal migrations, like prairie dogs and skunks and raccoons, they don't realize that they can't go past 274 feet. And all those things the landowners on our side of the development have to deal with. Now, I'm probably the only person that's going to be speaking here today because most of them are frustrated with the process of not being included. Most of them weren't contacted, even though no matter where you live along that, you're going to live with the effects of this development. And so you won't hear very many other people. The Homeowners Association wasn't contacted. I would think that there's probably 8 properties that are close to this development that I think 2 of us were contacted. So most of the people that were contacted actually live in Lorson Ranch. They understand that that development's going to take place. We live on 5-plus acre lots, which is kind of a different lifestyle. We own horses. We own other types of livestock. And sometimes that's going to conflict with that development. We have never been asked what could help us maintain our lifestyle. We've never been included in the development process. We're not engineers. A year ago, they attempted to put a road, an access road from Heritage Road into Lorson Ranch. It was defeated only because we don't have the appropriate roads for that type of development. However, when the substation was built out there, when the Southern Delivery System was built out there, they all used our roads instead of Lorson Ranch roads because they didn't want them to access through their property. We're chip sealed roads. I've lived out there 19 years. 17 years ago, our roads were resurfaced. They are dilapidated now. If you went out and you looked at those roads, the weeds have actually grown in 4 to 5 feet on each side. So not only are we seeing development, but because of the shortfalls in the county's road works, we don't get our roads resurfaced. So there, when you talked about that earlier, I understand that. I really know that we won't stop this, but it would be nice if there was some type of inclusion. The road that you were talking about will come right up against my property. No, it's not technically right against my property, but it is against my property because there will be nothing else there. And so I would ask that you really consider when you look at, especially to the south, to our development, that you look at what they're trying to do, how they're going to phase it in. And before you approve that, come to some type of compromise or consensus. I laugh about the trees because 12 years ago we asked them to maybe work with us in creating a buffer to the south, but it wasn't cost effective. And I know this might not sound very nice, but I think with Lorson Ranch, it's always the bottom line. It's not a quality of life for people out there because their open space is on a creek. It's on power line easements. Those aren't quality open spaces. I would wonder what type of bike paths they have in their present development. And if that is an indicator of what they're going to do in their next development, that's not very good. I don't have anything else to say if you have any questions.
Mr. Joya. Sir, if you could go over to the computer and just use the mouse, could you point out where you live on that map?
I live right here.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. Don't worry about it. I got it.
I have this triangle property right here.
Okay. And that's okay. I had one other question. I can't remember what it was. I just lost it. So that's good. Thank you.
Interesting. So the development is open area that you'd be next to. Is that correct?
No,
that's not correct.
And that, a road would come up against my property, and it looks, it would be right here. It's,
can you show it with the cursor?
The road would be...
Oh, that's much nicer.
Right here. And it looks a lot farther than it is, to be honest.
Yeah.
I think the road will actually be here. It depends upon which map you show. These maps don't show any houses or any side roads or anything like that on.
I think we can get that information here.
Right.
This is the power line easement. There's no road to your property.
Correct. I mean, there's no road that's connecting us because feasibly it would cost way too much money to go back and have to redo our road, put sidewalks and everything to have an access road there. The road is the road in their development. And the thing is it may be in their development, but we're going to hear it. We're going to see it. And I understand it's going to take place, but there has been no type of compromise between the two properties initiated. The bottom line with them is they're going to develop it and we're going to live with it. And it was that way in 2007, and I don't think it's changed.
How long have you lived in this area?
I've lived in this area since 1998.
Okay. So you've been sort of up against open space.
Yes. In fact, when I purchased my property, one of the things that the realtor told me is Fountain Valley School had been deeded this land by Lorson, a man that didn't have any relatives, so he deeded it to them as open space to their school. And then they sold it.
Yeah. Anything else?
No, I know you guys do great work, and I know your purpose, and I laugh because in 2007, the Planning Commission unanimously rejected the PUD, and 2 weeks later, the Board of County Commissioners approved it. So I understand that you guys are kind of in a pickle there, but I would hope that your recommendations would be that they would, now that it's getting closer, that they would work with us to minimize some of those things. If you look at the back of my barn, for instance, put a metal roof on there, and from the developments from them pulling dirt, my metal roof is supposed to be green, kind of a greenish brown now, from just the amount of dust. That dust doesn't stop outside, too. It comes in our houses. You know, it affects the health and welfare of us and our animals, and there could be some way that we could minimize those things, but I haven't seen that from them yet.
Any other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else here who would like to speak about opposition or concerns for this development? Hearing none, would you like to come forward and rebut and tie this together for us?
Sure. Jeff Mark with Lorson Ranch again. I'll transparently address the gentleman's concerns that was just up here. First off, Peaceful Valley is in the city of Fountain, not in the county. The streets are owned by City of Fountain, and as I believe, is that accurate, Kerry?
Picture's worth a thousand words, right? So only the golf course is been annexed into the City of Fountain, so this development is actually rural residential 5-acre zoned in unincorporated El Paso County, and that is this area here, and then this area here is also unincorporated El Paso County. Just the gray is areas that have been annexed into either Fountain or the city.
And that's an abandoned golf course now?
Unfortunately, the golf course is closed now. I believe it was called Apple Tree Golf Course.
Oh, okay.
Part of Peaceful Valley Road, correct me if I'm wrong, is within the city of Fountain. Is that accurate for ownership and maintenance? Or is all of Peaceful Valley within the county?
If you look at our latest map that was updated in the fall, this is still being shown, this portion is still being shown within unincorporated El Paso County. So.
Okay. Well, nonetheless, county or Fountain, there was mention of contention, you know, 12 plus years ago. I wasn't around, so I can't honestly speak to that. I believe that there was some, and I think that that is exactly why some of the density we have abutting Peaceful Valley is of lesser density, and you can see that as appropriated and referenced on our sketch plan. So, you know, those are discussions of the past, not the present. We, again, I don't know about the contention, but we undertook an approximate $900,000 water line, which we called the Peaceful Valley Water Main, which also connected down to the subdivision to the south where this gentleman lives. And that created the loop that they needed to increase the pressure down in their subdivision. So from my perspective, that's only a positive of one of the things that we've done. There was mention of access. We do not have access to the subdivision to the south. There was reference once upon a time to emergency access down to Peaceful Valley, and that was referenced on some of our older sketch plan documents. That's not intended, nor is it approved to go through. There will be no access from Lorson to Peaceful Valley. We mentioned the bridges that we're bringing on threefold, two on Lorson Boulevard and then one on Fontaine. Those will create all the access points that we need to finalize our full build-out of the entire 1,400 acres on Lorson Ranch. You know, there's mention of chip-sealed roads. That has nothing to do with us. I don't know about the ownership and maintenance, but it sounds like the county owns and maintains those. Again, has nothing to do with Lorson Ranch as far as you know, the condition of those roads. We don't connect. We're not putting traffic on those roads. There's also mention of Mountain Valley Electric and Colorado Springs Utilities using their roads for access. That's totally out of our control, by the way. We didn't prohibit them from coming down through our subdivision, number one, because we don't own the roads. They're public roads, similarly to Peaceful Valley. So my guess is they took the path of least resistance, if I just had to guess today, because, again, SDS had obtained through condemnation easement 50 to 60 feet all the way from Pueblo all the way through our property and going north. So they had a right via their easement to access from the south. They also had the ability to access via Fontaine Boulevard. So where they are truly accessing from, just for the record, is out of our control, whether it be Mountain Valley Electric or Colorado Springs Utilities. And then, you know, the open space, I chatted about that earlier. I think I actually misspoke. I believe I mentioned 70 acres. I think the original sketch plan documents set forth 170 acres out of our 1,400. So I wanted to clarify that comment from earlier.
A question that's come in my mind is, if you look at what's on the screen here and all that purple area, how close will you be building to the property line?
Well, our private property rights, I suppose, would lend towards our ability to build all the way up to the property line. However, that won't happen based on natural setbacks and things of that nature. So we haven't laid that area out to the south, immediately abutting Peaceful Valley. We'll take a look at that in the future. But we have, as far as this 800 and some odd lots, this is a several-year runway for development.
But as you get down closer to neighbors outside the PUD, do you have any plan as to how you're going to essentially transition that?
We don't. Again, we have not laid that area out.
Okay.
That would be something we undertake in the next several years.
Okay.
And so as far as the notifications, I understand the gentleman's frustration. You know, we don't make the rules. We just play by them as far as the notification process. Certainly, if he has any questions, we have our website. They're welcome to contact us anytime.
Okay. Thank you. Those are the questions I had.
Julia? I just wanted to address one more thing with the dust mitigation during development. I know that you're not the builder, you're the developer, so it will, is there a possibility of working with them to make sure that there are a little, maybe slightly more stricter guidelines on the building to make sure that the dust is mitigated while that's happening?
Yeah, I don't know about stricter guidelines necessarily, but we have several permits that we have to undertake and obtain before we can start our construction. The builders have a similar process. One is just the typical stormwater permit that you obtain through the state. The other is a dust control permit, and that's mandated to either be through El Paso County, depending on the acreage. I believe it's less than 30 acres. If it's in excess of 30 or 35 acres, you have to go through the state for the dust permit. And so we undertake that process, and on any given development, we have that. We have our BMPs or otherwise stormwater measures in place, generally to keep silt and sediment from going into inlets and other stormwater facilities. And as far as the dust itself is concerned, we are required to put water, meaning dust abatement efforts, on the property, particularly during the earthwork part of the construction. But water is being put on the property, generally speaking, from start to finish to keep the dust down. So we do abide by those regulations.
Okay. Ms. Dillon?
I'd like to see the street tree slide. Carrie? Oh, was it? Okay. Then whoever's, I would like to see that one. Okay, what I'm thinking, the road that comes down, now that is the one that comes down close to the Peaceful Valley.
Yes,
that would be
right here.
Yeah, that's what I was looking at. There's no requirement for street trees or anything on that one?
There's no.
I guess in my mind I was thinking, if that had some street trees on it, it would buffer somewhat from the other development.
Answer that just once. Let me try to find a better map.
Jason Allwine, Thomas & Thomas. Because the south side is undeveloped, we potentially could look at that in the future. I couldn't tell you if that is going to be 1 year, if that's going to be 10 years when that gets developed. Jeff did mention earlier, right now there's no plans to develop, at least along the property boundary. I can tell you, based on the 2016 plan, there are some conditions of approval as far as building setbacks and some lot size minimums along that boundary that we have to abide by. If and when we do move to the south, the notification then extends because our boundary certainly would be abutting adjacent neighbors. So the notification process would be a bit different in the future with this southernmost development. Those folks would be notified of whatever development is being proposed at that time. We can look at that in the future. Again, I can't tell you what that's going to be or when that may be.
Okay.
Yes, Mr. Maston.
I just want to address the permitting thing. I get it. You guys are following the permitting and everything else. I understand all that. But our permitting process in the county doesn't account for every situation that happens, so there's kind of that baseline for permitting. But I would just tell you, when you're done today, go up to Black Forest Road, north of Woodman, and I can tell you all the developers to the west side of Black Forest are complying with all the permits, but I can tell you that fence line is filled with plastic, it's filled with Tyvek, it's filled with all the trash that's from all of the construction that's going on up there. And you can look south of Banning Lewis Ranch, all of them are complying with the permits, okay? But what I don't see from developers is that with the winds that we get here, that they actually go out and take the time to clean up. So what I'm looking at here is that I suspect Mr. Paddock is gonna have trash loads of of stuff from your development. And where I'm at right now is I don't see any sort of leniency on your part at this point to want to work with him or his neighbors. And I will tell you, my job on this board is to represent the citizens and to give them a voice. And I would like to see something more from your development to go, hey, I'm going to work with the neighbors to take care of this and to mitigate that. Even though the permitting is in compliance, I'd like to see more out of developers that actually, you know, do something to work more with the neighbors, because we are a community here. And I can tell you that in my real job that I have, every time I fly into Los Angeles, I look down and I go, that's what we're going to look like here eventually if we don't do something. And you can see everybody from California is moving to Colorado because they're tired of the way things were done out there. Okay, and now we're coming here. So what I'm trying to say here is that I appreciate the permitting. I appreciate the 274-foot rule. I get all that. But I would really like to see somebody work with the neighbors who've been here for 20 years almost, coming up December 29th next year. He's at 19 years right now on his property, long before I would suspect maybe, you know, you were doing anything with this property. And I would like to see he and his neighbors have a voice in this. And I would like to see a developer actually work with the neighbors at 275 feet to actually go down and go, hey, we're developing up here. What can we do to be good neighbors? Because the bottom line is once your development is done, you guys are off the next development. And he's the one that's going to have to take care of his animals, take care of his ranch, and take care of things down there. Well, you guys move on to the next thing. So what I'm getting at here is that I would like to see something more from the developer to work with the neighbors in the surrounding area and not just necessarily stick to, hey, we're just going to go, these are what the permits say, and that's all I'm going to do. I'd like to see more of a good neighbor policy here. And again, I'm here to be a voice for the neighbors, to be a voice for the citizens. Just, I want truth in advertising here, and that's where I'm coming from with this.
Sure, and we appreciate that. Number one, I don't dispute anything you just said. Today is the first time I've been asked to address any concern from this particular gentleman or anybody to the south in my 10-year runway with the company. So I don't know exactly what's being asked of us. Certainly we're willing to listen. And again, to reiterate, this gentleman or anyone else is welcome to call me and we can chat ideas. I just don't know today what's being asked of me, or otherwise I could directly address that.
Yeah, and the other thing, too, I'd like to bring up, too, is I am not a fan of it's online. It's on the Internet. Just go find it. Because I can tell you that our Internet that we have, just because we put it online, doesn't mean that it's accessible. Okay? Things are online, but what you're actually requiring is people like Mr. Paddock here to disregard his normal work and spend 12 hours a day online just waiting for something to change. So he knows that he needs to address it. So, again, just from my perspective, I would just like to see developers reach out a little farther to go, we're doing a development here. Can we get your input? What could we do to help, you know, make this conducive for everybody? And as far as the access on his road, I'm with him on this as well. I see this quite often. The big gorilla comes in and says, we're going to drive all of our deuce and a half down this thing. We're going to haul dirt. We're going to haul stone. And then when, you know, and really not look for any sort of approval until somebody finally speaks up. Because just like he said, that road will not be maintained. That road is falling apart as it is. But because the gorilla was told they can't, okay, well, I have no concern for this now because we're going to come in from these other streets. But I'll guarantee you, once you guys start moving things into this property, everybody west is going to start complaining about all the equipment and stuff that's moving in and out of there because of the dust, the noise, how it damages the roads. So I'm going to get off my soapbox here pretty quick. But the thing is that I would just like to see developers, if you're going to come in here, if you're going to come into Colorado Springs, you're going to develop it. Be a good neighbor. Deal with the neighbors. Just because the law says 274 feet, that doesn't mean you can't go to 275 or 276 or better yet, a half a mile, you know, to go talk with people around and go, hey, how is this going to impact the community? And I think we might see a little less angst towards developers than what we're seeing right now. So I'll get off my soapbox.
Yeah, and again, I appreciate that. Maybe somebody from county staff could further address that because could go to the extra mile, but again,
I'm sorry, I'm going to interrupt you here. It's not the county's responsibility. We have laws that are put in place. Okay, they're put in place. It's a baseline, but it's not all inclusive. It's just like when a police officer pulls somebody over. We have laws but every situation is dependent on the person involved. And you have to assess that situation based off the person that's involved. Just like when you develop a neighborhood, we have a baseline of laws that you need to follow. But every neighborhood is unique and different in its own way. Every neighborhood has its own set of circumstances. I can tell you that my neighbors in Black Forest are much different than the neighbors you're going to find on Rock Rimmon, you know, or perhaps in other parts of town. But the thing is that we're all kind of falling under the same laws, okay, the same rules. It's a baseline, but it doesn't prevent you as a developer from reaching out and going, let's look at the situation here. And if you take a look where this development is, there's a lot of people that live out there that are there that have been there for 19 years because they like the acreage and they like the space. And now developers are coming through and plowing their way through what was supposed to be an open space. You know, so I would just like to see developers spend more time dealing with the neighbors, working with the neighbors, and going, how can we do this? Do we have to go this kind of density housing right up against the 5-acre or 35-acre parcel, or can we kind of do a gradual growth into that so it's not such an abrupt change between the two types of property? So I'll get off my soapbox now. So.
Okay. I think this does identify an area where improved communication would probably be beneficial both to you and for the neighbors south of you, and perhaps you could work with the county to come up with something that would help deal with that, because you're going to be doing some development south of where you are now, and they're not going to be moving, and so probably thinking through that would probably be a good idea.
Sure, we'd be happy to send the notification to those property owners so that can begin the communication going forward.
Perhaps a little more than just notification, perhaps identification if there is a homeowners association or something down in here that the district and homeowners association having some communication channels would be worthwhile. Yes, Ms. Dillon.
Yes, I want to add to that. I mean, pre-construction and during construction, meet with those homeowners association and ask, how is it going? What can we do to help? Yes, some demands may be unreasonable and you cannot do anything about it, but having that open communication would mean so much to them and to your future development as far as having anyone complain about it. Just meeting with people and saying, how can we help you?
Thank you. Any other comments? With that, let's see, does the city, the county have anything else they would like to add?
Not at this time, if there's no more questions.
Well, thank you. We have an issue, and the chair will entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Mr. Joya.
As regards regular item number 3, PUDSP 16-003, Larson Ranch East Planned Unit Development Preliminary Plan, I move for approval under the new standard resolution pages 29 and 25 with 11 conditions and 4 notations, with a finding of sufficiency for water quality, quantity, and dependability.
Okay. Do I hear a second?
Second.
All right. Second from Ms. Dillon. So we have a motion and a second on the table. Is there any discussion?
We've got a...
Excuse me. Would you want to add the recommended condition number 11 into your motion?
I already did. I got 11 conditions.
Yes. There was
11. Sorry. We didn't hear it, so we just wanted to make sure we caught it.
Sure.
No, it was in the motion, and it had been read during the presentation. Right. So...
I do have a comment.
Yes. Please go ahead.
I have to say this conversation about good neighbors and stuff comes up on a regular basis here, and I really do appreciate seeing developers who work with the people in the neighborhood. I don't think this developer has been bad with the neighbors up to this point. I think a football field, the difference between the bottom of this proposed development, which is going to take place over the next few years, it's reasonable that they didn't reach out
further because it's not adjacent. It's quite a distance away. However, that being said, now that they know it's a potential issue, please, he's right behind you. Talk to him. You know, see what you guys can do about talking this out, because it's going to move forward, I think. I think it's going to be approved. It looks like a good development, good planning on it so far. I like what I'm seeing. I have a couple issues that I'll definitely be looking at when it comes back for final. But we really like for developers to be good neighbors, and I hope that'll continue.
Yes, Mr. Maston.
I'd just like to kind of piggyback on that as well. The actual development itself, I've got no issues with the way the development's being done. The fact you guys are doing more open space than's required, I think that's great. I wish we would see more of that. I just need to be a voice for Mr. Paddock. Sure. And it's the same type thing. I mean, obviously, it's going to go forward. And what I'm going to be looking for is what has been done to work with Mr. Paddock and his neighbors to be good neighbors and to deal with a lot of the issues that we see here in the county, and that is developers are complying with the rules. But, you know, the one thing we don't have here is a rule against the wind, and anybody that lives out east knows that the wind blows pretty hard, and it's kind of hard to keep construction debris down. So I would like to see some sort of initiative on your end at that point, so when this comes around again. But everything up to this point, I will say that I think the development itself looks like a good development. But I just want to make sure that Mr. Paddock and his neighbors' voices are heard.
Yes, Mr. Cleary, do you want to say something?
I agree with both of the gentlemen who spoke before. There's two issues that I know Ms. Dillon and I have talked about in her previous assignment here. That we sometimes consider these development issues in the micro viewpoint. The development is encased within a certain area, but that affects the other areas, and we rarely get to, it talks about harmony and et cetera, and it's harmony within a certain boundary around this, but we don't often get a chance to look at it in the macro viewpoint. Are we creating more roads for more people? And can we adjust these kinds of developments that's okay with the developer to make it better for the community as a whole, not just for the area surrounding it? So I struggle with that. I know we have never come to a really clear answer how to go about that. And the second point is, I think that the county has some, not responsibility, but some, perhaps a change that they might think about. Just putting things on the internet, I agree, is really nice. It's great to do if you're really smart about it. If I asked my wife to do it, she'd be there a year and we wouldn't get an answer. She just, as are many people, not totally competent in going to the county's website to see what's happening. And yet they're not being told about stuff that's a football field away or more, or half a mile. Somehow, I don't know how the county gets it, and we're going to see it in the next one. Somehow, people aren't communicating with what the rules could be. Maybe we can extend those rules somehow. I'm way over my head because I don't know. But I just wanted to say that I agree with their statements. This will go through. And I'm through.
Anything else? Hearing none, we are dealing with item 3, PUD SP-16-003, Planned Unit Development Preliminary Plan for Lorson Ranch East, with 11 conditions and 4 notations, approval from page 29 and 25 with sufficiency for water quality, quantity, and dependability. And so that's the item that is on the table, and we'll go through the vote. Mr. Gioia?
Aye.
Mr. Creeley?
Aye.
Mr. Maston?
Aye.
Ms. Dillon?
Aye.
And the chair votes aye, and the motion is approved unanimously. Let's take another 5-minute break, and then we'll be back for the final item.
So we'll move on to item four.
Neither East with Planning and Community Development for the Double D Ranch Kennel request.
I don't think your microphone is on.
Am I on? Okay.
Oh, okay.
Our team consists of myself and Elizabeth Nykamp as the engineer. The file number is AL17-021. This is a request to legalize an existing kennel that's been in operation for just about 5 years. So now we'll have Kenny go over the review criteria.
Thank you. A little more manageable set of criteria for this one. First is consistency with the master plan. Harmony with the neighborhood would be the second criteria. No overburdening to public facilities as far as existing facilities are concerned. No unmitigated traffic congestions are created by the special use, and compliance with all county, federal, state law, regs, regulations, and ordinances.
Thank you. So now we'll have the owner's representative, Jean Fredman, come forward for her presentation.
Have you had an opportunity to sign in?
No, I'm going to do that now.
All right. And then give your name into the microphone so we get it in the record.
Thank you. My name is Jane Fredman. I'm an attorney here in Colorado Springs, and I'm here on behalf of Double D Ranch and the applicant Deanna Brecky and Dodd Johnson. Deanna Brecky is with me today to answer any questions or to provide any additional comments that may be needed. The request is to for a special use authorization for a kennel for up to 10 client dogs. Deanna Brecky and Dodd Johnson moved to Colorado Springs in 2012. They came from Texas, where they had experience in training dogs and doing some golden retriever rescue operations. Deanna has 15 years of dog training experience, mainly in the agility and obedience training. And when they were shopping for a home, they looked in the Black Forest and were shown this property, and it was operated as perennial kennels by the former owner, who had operated a dog grooming, boarding, and breeding facility on the same 5-acre property since 2004. So actually the existing kennel business has been under two owners, but has been operating there for about 13 years. Unfortunately, during their marketing or shopping for a new home, they did not dig deeper and find out whether the kennel, the existing kennel owned by the seller, was properly permitted or licensed, and they bought it on the basis and the assumption that it was proper, and there had been no complaints for the last 5 years while they operated the Double D Dog Ranch, until they the county received an anonymous complaint, I think in the late summer of last year. And so then the county notified Deanna and Dodd, and they started the special use request process. I'd like to, do we still have that neat thing where we can put this down and it shows up on the screen?
Yes.
Oh, good, thank you. Sorry, I'm not PowerPoint proficient. This is the assessor's, from the assessor's website, and this is obviously the layout of the lots, the 5-acre properties that are adjacent. Double D is in the middle and it's circled around. You'll probably hear or read about letters and comments regarding or from neighbors. The Morleys are on the east of the Double D. The Bushes are on the west.
A little, there's a pop-up that's blocking.
Oh, I'm sorry. And so the ones that are starred are the neighbors who commented, but all of my understanding is that those neighbors that are listed are the ones who did get notification the two times of this special use request. There was one anonymous response that said no opinion, and we don't know who that's from. I want to show you also the site plan. All of these things are in your, should be in your packet or online. I don't know how you, if you have actual pieces of paper or if you get it online. But this is the layout, and let me move it to it this way because then it'll be done north-south. If we can get it moved up a little bit, if I'm doing that correctly. Thank you. This shows the layout of the Double D Ranch property. It's 5 acres, and Arrowhead Drive is on the south side. North is facing up, and that's pretty much their layout. If you look there on the west side, there's a horse pasture. I went to the property a couple of months ago to observe and take a look at what was the surroundings, and I can attest that walking up from the house and the shop area, you sort of walk up a hill, and that's fairly well treed on the west side. There's a horse pasture. There are double fences. There's a fence on the boundary of the neighbors, and then there's also a fence there. These are not these are dog-proof fencing. It's not just the wire fencing. The driveway comes from Arrowhead. Down in here, and this is a driveway area parking lot. The house, there's a garage there. You'll note in the letter of intent that the garage is used as the kennel for overnight boarding. Right behind, right to the north of the garage, is what they call the dog room, and that's an insulated or heated area where they also maintain and keep the dogs. It's a two-story house. So right above the garage and the dog area, or the dog room, is their master bedroom. So if there's any kind of dog noises or anything coming during the night, they can go down, or if there's an emergency. This is a shop that's not used as part of the business operations. It's mainly used for storage. I think that when I was there, they had the door open, and I think dogs could lay there, you know, in the sun. On the east side is an open area. It's just a mowed pasture or grassy area. There's a fenced agility field, large agility field. Then there's their horse barn. Again, as I observed, and I can show you an aerial photo of the from the assessor's records, which may or may not show you how treed it is. Mainly, this is sort of an open meadow. The Morleys live on the east side, and their house is probably, you know, probably over here. But then there's trees all around the border. And then they've got the small agility field, which is another fenced area right behind their house. And that's where most of the training and the dog work comes into play. During the summer, spring, and fall, when there's foliage, that is all covered with shrubbery, and everything is, you know, fairly maintained, well maintained, and not visible. So that's pretty much the layout. If you then go back, you can see how the neighbors. I mean, this is a small map, but you can see how the neighbors are situated. Let me show you this picture of the assessor's aerial map. You can see this is the Double D Ranch, how treed it is. I mentioned it was a meadow. There's not as many trees there. Again, this goes up a little bit. You walk up a hill pretty much to the boundary. This is Arrowhead Drive. This comes, I guess, from Pine Creek High School. This is used as a shortcut by the kids driving from school. There's a hill, a slight hill that comes down, and then you get to road. I've circled where the houses are located on each of the property parcels. As Kenny relayed to you or wrote or stated, there are criteria that need to be met in order to comply with the requirements of a special use application under the land use code. And we submit that the applicable criteria under section 5.3.2C of the code have been met. First of all, the special use is generally consistent with the applicable master plan. First, we have the overall county master plan, and then we've got the sub-area plan, which is the Black Forest Preservation Plan. Under the general master plan, goal 7.1 states the goal of reasonably accommodating unique and special uses which provide value to the community and which could be made consistent with surrounding uses. So the theme today is basically the master plan talks about the Black Forest, in particular this area of the Black Forest, as being rural residential. It's zoned RR5. Everything has to be compatible with a residential, rural residential use. The staff report on page 5 cites that there are two policies under the goals, 7.1.1 and 7.1.2, which provide more detail. But the main issue is that the special use has to provide value to the community, and it has to be compatible or consistent with the surrounding uses. The Double D Ranch is in compliance with this requirement. There's a need for dog daycare and boarding and training facilities for dogs in northern El Paso County. There aren't a whole lot of those types of facilities that to serve the growing Colorado Springs population, especially as it grows north and east of the downtown area. The property will and has always remained residential in character and use. There are no visible signs that a business is operated there. It's mainly houses, and you can look in the photos that we provided as part of our letter of intent. I think they should be in color, that show the driveway, the existing house, the agility area, the small agility area, just the overall layout. It does not look like a business. Everything, there's no, you know, industrial-looking buildings at all. The noise, traffic, and odors have been addressed and will never be a neighborhood problem. This kennel has been in existence through a prior owner, but pretty much doing the same thing since 2004. When I went back to the assessor's office and did some research on the neighbors and how long they've lived there, the Double D Ranch owners, the current owners, are the second youngest or second latest owners to come in. I think the earliest one was 1990, and so they've lived there prior to when the original existing kennel had been utilized. And again, no complaints until an anonymous complaint last August or September. In the Black Forest Preservation Plan, I can refer you to page 5 of the staff report and then also page 3 of our letter of intent. There's a policy number 1.6, which offers to provide low impact uses in area designated for rural residential uses. So the low impact use is defined in part as which, due to its low intensity, limited scale, and predominantly rural character, could be incorporated into an area of rural residential character without significantly altering that character. And a low impact use includes certain services of a limited scope and intensity. And this is exactly what the Double D Ranch kennel application is intended to do. There's a maximum of 10 client dogs on a property, and it's not going to change the rural residential character of these 5-acre lots. There are other relevant sections of the plan. Goal 3.A, promote a residential environment, to perpetuate the residential character of that Black Forest planning area, and then maintaining the scale of new commercial uses to be in balance with existing uses, and discourage commercial uses if they are incompatible. So again, we're going back to the compatibility with the local character of the community. I guess I don't, this may be a commercial operation because they are getting money from it, but it's not like, you know, going down to Camp Bow Wow or some of the other facilities that are more of a commercial. They do a lot of advertisement and all that. So Double D Ranch is consistent and compatible with the goals and policies of that the small area plan. The business is a low impact use that's allowed in this RR5 zoning. The business has no visible signs of any commercial activity. There's no signs advertising that it's a dog daycare or training facility. And the house is, again, the predominant feature on the property. And the scope of the business is clearly defined. If you look at our letter of intent, we agreed to numerous restrictions. As if you would like, Deanna can come up and explain how she vets and makes sure that the dogs that she accepts are of good character and they aren't barkers and they obey and they are going to be part of their group. She's very picky about it. When they are outside, they're always under human supervision. You'll note in our letter of intent that they pick up dog waste two or three times a day and it's disposed of properly once a week with a regular trash. And then the traffic has been addressed. That was one of the complaints of the neighbors, and I'll mention that in a few minutes. There was another criteria under the Land Development Code is very similar to what I've been talking about. It's consistent and in harmony with the existing allowable land uses. There have never been any complaints until the anonymous complaint in last year, and it's been in use for the last 13 years. The business is certainly secondary to the use as a residence. Number three, the criteria, the impact of the special use does not overburden or exceed the capacity of public facilities and services, and they will not create unmitigated traffic congestion, et cetera. Those are criteria three and criteria four of the code. The one complaint that came out fairly loud and clear from the neighbors after the initial notice was given about this application was that the applicants were allowing their clients to park on the road, on the public road, and then walk their dogs into the property. And the neighbors said that may create a traffic problem. They didn't like the cars parking on the road, et cetera. So they immediately, once they learned of the complaint, they immediately stopped it. And now they require the dogs to be dropped off in the driveway area near the house. They're on leash. It's all fenced. And that has been resolved. Our letter of intent also shows a regular day or week, actually, of dog drop-offs, how many cars per day go on this county road to drop off and pick up their dogs. So it's a very low-impact type of use. They have 1 to 6 cars per day, generally not on weekends. Criteria number five, the special use will comply with all applicable local, state, and federal laws regarding air, water, light, or noise pollution. The special use will, and then criteria number six, the special use will not otherwise be detrimental to the public health, safety, and welfare of the citizens. Those are also accomplished by that. We had the El Paso County Health Department indicate as long as you clean up your pet waste properly, then you'll be in compliance. This facility is licensed by the state, as all pet facilities are required to be. And so to their knowledge, they are in compliance with all regulations and everything else. We did address the concerns of the neighbors to, I know that there was one letter that was brought, I guess, sent over yesterday. It's mainly, the themes are the traffic, and we've alleviated that. The barking dogs, and we have a strict no bark dog policy, where if your dog is an incessant barker, that they are either taken off the property and told not to return, or they put a bark collar on them. So it's a matter of the training, and that's what Deanna does to assess whether the dog is a suitable participant or client at the facility. So there's no more parking on the road. There were some issues about, well, the traffic and cars. There was a question or a complaint about Dodd Johnson cursing at the dogs, I guess in a loud voice, and that has been alleviated to the extent it can. I don't know how to respond other than if your dog is disobeying, does your voice ring down, you know, bellow loudly or not? I mean, it's a matter of having some control, and he's agreed to quell that as much as he can. There was an allegation that they used that shop building as part of their business, and that's not correct. There was an allegation that they have up to 20 dogs there at a time. That's not correct. There's a question about reduced property values and things, and I guess that's a subjective question. When I went to their house, I saw a beautiful two-story house with a shop on one side and a horse barn in the back, and it's fully fenced, and everything seemed very peaceful. It looked like a regular house that you normally see out in the Black Forest. I didn't notice that there was a business being done there. There was also an issue of, if this special use application is granted, then they have no incentive to comply with it. So even though their use is not permitted at this point, that somehow the fact that you give that, you know, if and when it's granted, that somehow they're then going to throw everything to the wind and not comply with it. And I would argue an opposite to that, because the first thing you can do if someone's disobeying a special use permit is to call the county and get code enforcement out there. Or the county has the right under the Board of County Commissioners to revoke or suspend the special use permit if it's not being properly applied. I'm happy to answer any questions, or Deanna Brecky can come up and answer any questions, but we'd request that you approve the special use application for a kennel, and I thank you for your time.
Could you just clarify, I was confused about there weren't any complaints, but there were complaints. So out of all the neighbors surrounding the property, this is question number one, all the neighbors surrounding the property, is there anybody, are any of the neighbors against the special use permit?
Yes.
How many are against?
Let me explain this special, or the complaint.
Okay.
There were no complaints at all, no complaints about parking, dogs barking, you know, anything that was reported to Double D Ranch until the anonymous complaint in September 2017.
Okay.
Then, when the notice went out about the special use application, was when the neighbors wrote in and filed their complaints. So I kind of highlighted the ones that I saw as being their complaints, and that's what I responded to. So when we look at this letter, or when we look at this map, the Morleys submitted a response, and I think that they're here, that Mr. Morley is here today. The Gannons filed a complaint, or at least responded with complaints. And then HOHAG filed a complaint, or at least, I shouldn't say it like that. When they responded, they said, we have complaints about dogs barking. Orly said, we have complaints about dogs barking. There was an incident in 2014 where there was a fence fight. They had some guest dogs over on his property, apparently, and so there were some going about, you know, barking and things. And that, to my client's knowledge or understanding, had been resolved, and it hasn't happened since. So then the Gannons have similar complaints, parking. They were the ones who said that the shop was being used for the business, and that, you know, the parking, the many dogs, et cetera. The Haneys had an issue with the parking, but then their letter also said, but we don't, you know, this was a prior existing use, and we don't have any opposition to it. And then these next-door neighbors just submitted a response yesterday, and I believe their chief issue was, well, if you let them in, then who's to stop other things from coming in? And we just don't, my take on it was, we just don't want business. You can't control who will live there in the future, et cetera. Did I clear that up?
You did. And just one other kind of a follow-up question, that when you purchased the property, did the realtor give you the impression that this was all fine? And Mr. Joy, I'd like you to hear this too. When you purchased the property, your realtor gave you the impression that this dog kennel was permitted and ready to go.
Hi, yes, I'm Deanna Brecky. I'm the owner of the house and the trainer. And yes, should we have done a little more digging? Probably. So here we are today. Okay. But yes, they had a golden retriever breeding, and they have in the back of our house, the back room is set up for grooming. It's capped now because I don't groom. But it's capped for a tub, and it's a fully tiled room, and they also bred. We do not breed. All dogs on our property have to be spayed or neutered. There's too many dogs that need homes. So, but yeah, everybody has on our part. It has to be, unless they're 6 months or less, has to be spayed and neutered. But that was their business. And like I said, should have dug a little deeper. But yes, we even had some of their, they gave me, I have their list of clients. So they handed over to me that we're boarding with them. And they more specialized in the breed of golden retrievers, but they also had some other ones. And I also have golden retrievers, so. But we opened it up. There's lots of good dogs. So, yes.
Okay, I just wanted to clarify the realtor portion. I've only been on this commission for about 6 months now, and I think you're the fifth or sixth person that was potentially given information from a realtor that wasn't accurate. So I just wanted to make a point of that.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah. The house closing was not an easy obstacle anyway.
Any other questions?
How many dogs are kept there now?
It depends on the day. Our cap is going to be 10 dogs, 10 visiting dogs. I have 5 of my own that I compete in agility with. One of them is older, so he's probably not going to make it that much longer. But I have 3 Goldens and my other Border Collie, and then one of my other Goldens that I compete with. And so it would be 10 max for boarding, training, daycare, dogs, visiting dogs.
Okay, so they essentially you'd end up with 15 dogs on the property.
Yeah, there'd be 15 total.
Because I had noticed, one of our conditions is 10, and I wanted
and then my
to
personal,
make sure that
my
wasn't,
personal dogs
wasn't different from what you've been doing.
Yeah, no,
that's
absolutely.
What I was looking at.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Just a question. Do we have a limit on the number of dogs that a person can own in the county?
Yes.
What is the max number a person can own in the county on their property?
I believe it's 4.
Okay. You 4, but you got 5.
So, yeah.
Okay. Okay. So, so we do already have a county ordinance regarding the max number of dogs a person can own personally. Okay.
So you're already outside that.
Yes.
Okay. But one may be
On its way out.
On its way out.
You have one that's, yeah.
So, but, so essentially then it's 14 dogs is what you're going to have on the property.
Yes.
Once that dog passes. Okay.
I believe you, we have letters of support that you probably have on your desk, so I wanted to have those introduced into the record. Thank you.
Nina Reese again with Planning and Community Development. To get to your point, Mr. Mastin, there is a limitation in the land development code of 4 dogs, so that was accurate. Anything above that, we actually consider a kennel. So if she didn't have any commercial use on the property but had 5 dogs and we received a complaint, that would be considered a kennel and she would have to go through the same special use process as what we're doing today. Obviously, the request would be slightly different. I didn't realize that she had 5 personal dogs on site. So I'm going to go kind of out of order and suggest revising one of the recommended conditions. So I believe it would be more appropriate to revise the condition regarding the number of dogs to say there shall be no more than 15 dogs on site at any time. That way, if we do receive a complaint, we don't have to determine if it's a personal dog or if it's a dog that is there for the commercial business. So I would make that suggestion, and if you're agreeable in making your motion, make sure that you make that change.
Do we want to do that, or do we want to make it no more than 10 dogs not owned by the...
That's what it says.
No, right now it just says 10 dogs on site.
In association with the kennel.
With the kennel.
And that's what it says right now, but because she already exceeds the allowance, her existing dogs would be considered a kennel and part of the kennel because she's got 5.
Right, but if we raise it up to 15, then we're, we're increasing the numbers of dogs that could come from the outside.
That is true. That is very true.
I think there may be a better way around this.
Okay. If we did that, then one of her dogs would always be considered part of being associated with the kennel. So then she really essentially could only have 9
yes.
dogs for a commercial purpose until that dog passes away.
That's correct.
Yeah.
I think that's the better thing than increasing the number of dogs that she could have coming from the outside.
Okay. I just thought I'd bring that up. It's up to you guys to decide, so. Okay. So, again, this is a request to legalize an existing kennel for up to 10 dogs on site. So the applicant did cover the various uses that are associated with that kennel, so I'm not going to go over those again. Just to provide you with a little bit of background, the property was zoned RR5 in 1955, and we are aware that perennial kennels was in operation from about 2004 to 2012. We're only aware of that based upon the applicant's letter of intent, though. As you all know, we operate on a complaint basis only for code enforcement actions at this time. So because no complaint was received, even though they were operating out of compliance, they were never forced to bring the property into compliance. So then when Double D Ranch purchased the property in 2012, they established the same use, and we didn't receive any complaint until we received an anonymous complaint in May of this past year. So there were no complaints from 2004 until 2017. But now that the request has been brought forward, we have received numerous complaints from the neighbors. So they submitted a special use application September 5th of this year. We started the process administratively just because it had been an existing kennel for so long without any complaints. But due to the number of letters of opposition that we received from the neighbors, the special use was elevated to a public hearing. So that's why we're before you today. The property is zoned RR5 and is surrounded by other RR5 properties. Further to the south and to the west is within the city limits of Colorado Springs, but that's probably approximately a mile away. The applicant covered the overall policy plan, but just as a reminder, if it's determined that a use is a value to the greater community and that it can be made consistent through mitigation measures, then the policy plan could support this type of application. The applicant also covered this as well, but the property is within the Black Forest Preservation Plan, the Briar Gate Transition Area. This is not within an area that the plan designates as a commercial node or recommends commercial uses, but the plan does say that if a use is determined to be a low-impact use and that it fits within the rural residential character of a neighborhood, that that use could be supportable by the plan as well. So I haven't included all of the conditions and notations on the screen, only those that are of significance to this application. So the first one is that it's limited to the kennel as described and depicted on the site plan and in the letter of intent. So that means that if they establish a new agility field, for example, on the property, then that would be in violation of the special use approval and they would have to come back to us. The limitation on the number of dogs, it sounds like that may be resolved. It might still be up for discussion for you guys, but as of right now, it's being proposed to be a maximum of 10 dogs in association with the kennel, and that all animal waste is disposed of in a manner that complies with the requirements of El Paso County Public Health. And the last one is requiring them to obtain a well permit for the use. As part of the special use review, we required a copy of their well permit, and the well permit doesn't appear to allow for this type of use, so they'll have to go to the state to get approval for that. That's outside of us, but we just want to make sure that they take that extra step.
On that very first one, condition, I know it was stated that, you know, there's the shed there and they're not using the shed, but the fact that it's there, it's included in that first condition, correct?
The structure is included, but because their letter of intent indicates the areas that are being used for the kennel operation, if the shop were to be used for the kennel operation in the future, that would be in violation.
Okay.
So they would either have to come back to us or
okay.
It could be revoked.
Okay, thank you.
7 neighbors were notified of the Planning Commission hearing. They were also notified previously when the decision was anticipated to be made administratively. So in removing all of the duplicate responses and just looking at the individual properties, we've received 5 letters of opposition for the individual property, so 5 properties are in opposition. And we did receive 1 no opinion. That one was anonymous. So we're not sure where that one came from. And the applicant did supply 7 letters of support today as well. I don't believe that any of those are adjacent property owners. So that concludes my staff presentation. Are there any questions?
And thank you very much. RR5, a kennel isn't allowed special use in an RR5, is that correct?
Yes, in the RR5, you can have a kennel if you have a special use approved.
All right, so it is okay to have a commercial, this kind of commercial operation, if the special use is obtained.
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
Uh-huh.
All right, thank you.
At this point in time, we will open the public hearing part. If there's anyone here like to speak in support of this application, yes, please come forward, sign in, state your name.
Hello, my name is Sarah Nguyen. I am an employee of Double D Ranch. They actually paid me to $10 an hour to come and just watch these dogs. I just wanted to point out the main purpose that Deanna is doing this ranch is for dogs to have a place to come and have fun. They have a good time. This isn't a kennel where you see actual kennels. When I think of a kennel, I think of like a shelter kind of. You think of dogs in kennels. I've never seen a dog in a kennel when anyone was home and we were outside. I actually have, can you put that thing back up? I have a picture I want to show you guys just of like how this is my dog who I do go to daycare for the ranch with her. All right, so if you can see right here, these dogs, they're just rolling around on this hill. Like, this is the main hill right after the house. And this really shows, I think this shows just how blissful these dogs are and how they have all this time to roam around and make, there's actually relationships with these dogs. Like, there's these two dogs, Lena and Mac, and they are, like, best friends, always, like, running around, having a good time together. And I really thought the coolest thing was that this is her passion. This isn't what, she's not doing this for the money. She's doing this because this is her passion. She loves training dogs. She loves helping others train dogs. I've learned so much about training dogs from this lady. Like, she's taught me so many tricks about training dogs, so many ways to change the behavioral pattern. She got my dog walking on a treadmill, and it boosted her confidence. I would have never thought of it. And every time she would get on it, she would love it. Every time she'd get off, she'd love it. She really has changed my dog. I've seen her change a lot of dogs, and I just think it's really awesome that she's doing this for a passion. She's not doing this for money, exploiting these people and their dogs. She just wants them to have a fun place to be, and she loves dogs. Like, this is her passion. So I just want to make that a point that this is definitely what she loves doing. It's not something that she is like a chore to her. This is like her passion and this is her life. So I just want to make that a point for everybody.
So, any thank you. Questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Is there anybody else who would like to speak in favor? You're not one to speak in favor. Okay, please come forward then.
My name is Michelle Chernowski. I am one of the people who submitted a letter of support for Double D. We've been taking our dog there a little over 2 years. She's 3 years old now. She wasn't quite a year old when we started there. And we had previously taken her to what you would call a standard kennel for doggy daycare and so forth. She was well socialized by the time she got there, so she was accepted into the pack. But this is unique, and there aren't many places like this. I don't know of another place. There may be another one, but I don't know of another place where the dogs can all just play together like this. We no longer wanted to, when you take your dog to a kennel facility for daycare, they're generally locked in a kennel, in an actual kennel by themselves for at least half the time that they're there. And what really appealed to us was the dogs all get along, they have a good time, they run around, they can rest when they want to, they can play when they want to. Our dog follows Dot around when he does his chores sometimes. There aren't enough places like that. Excuse me. And I would hate to see a situation where there wasn't any longer a place like this. We can testify to the fact that they do limit the number of dogs. We've emailed or texted before and been told no, we're full that day, and that's fine. We take her another day, and we wouldn't take her. If if they're not allowed to operate any longer, we really don't have any other place to board our dog that we feel comfortable with. It's like her home away from home, and she's happy there. And if we have questions, we get a hold of them when we're traveling, and they send us a picture, or they'll say she's doing just fine or whatever, and it's the second best thing to her own home. So
Did you have a chance to sign in over there?
Oh, I'm very sorry.
Well, I was neglectful in asking you to do that, so I own that problem.
That's it in a nutshell. We feel like this is, we wish there were more places like this, because I'm sure there's a lot of other people that would take advantage of it.
Thank you. Any questions?
Thank you.
Thank you very much for coming forward. Anyone else who would like to speak in favor, please come forward and sign in and state your name.
Hi, my name is Robin Silver. I've been bringing my dog on a regular basis to the ranch for about 3 years, maybe more, roughly around there. I have a very active dog breed. I've also submitted a letter in favor of them. But I have a very active dog, and this has been a godsend. I mean, I literally bring him once a week for daycare, weather permitting. but he, it has been phenomenal for his training. He gets tired out. He's a scent hound, so it's perfect for him to have this space to be able to run and catch a scent and follow it. Whereas at home, you know, we're limited to this very small backyard, or when I have him on a leash when I'm walking him, he doesn't get that opportunity to follow that and be a dog, you know. They've been wonderful in taking care of my dog when I've boarded him overnight as well. And I know that when I do that, I can leave and not be worried about him cooped up in a kennel for most of the day. You know, he is taken care of as if he is one of their own. And I can go on my vacation without worry or concern at all. He's been very well taken care of. And I live on the north end of town. They're only a few miles from my house. And I'm not aware of anyone else who does this operation that close to where I live. So it's very convenient for me. On the days that I work long hours, I can drop him off, go to work, and I know he is not at home just lying around, that he's actually able to be active. It's helped with his socialization. It's just been a godsend, and I'm just glad that someone recommended them to me. So I highly recommend that they be offered this special use permit, because it's been a valuable service to me as a consumer, and I'm sure to others as well. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is there anybody else here who would like to speak in favor? Hearing none. I presume there are people here who would like to speak in opposition. And when you come forward to speak in opposition, and I should have said this, those in favor, you get sort of one chance. So make sure that what you want to say, you get said, because you won't be allowed to come back unless there's a question from the commissions. So who would like to come first? Step forward. Come on up and sign in and state your name and let us know what's on your mind.
My name is Ed Gannon. I am one of the neighbors directly across. And I'd like to go through a few of the items that were stated previously. The cursing at the barking dogs, it's not just yelling at the dog, hey, shut up. It's profane, extreme, dirty words, frankly. And I live across the street, and I can hear it from my property. My granddaughter, sitting on the deck, can hear these curse words being screamed at the dogs. It is continuing. I have an audio recording from just this morning It's kind of hard to hear, but it is continuing. So that is not something that has been alleviated.
I don't know.
The statement that dogs are always supervised while outside is not always the case. There have been occasions where dogs are barking, nobody's there, the dogs are outside running amok, and we have had no one to let know that, hey, the dogs are barking, please do something about it. The dogs do get out on a fairly regular basis. We have dogs fenced in our yard, and on numerous occasions we've had to call Double D to come get a dog who is on the other side of the fence barking at our dogs. So they do get out. Let's see. I do have some photographs. If you could turn on the overhead, please. This is just very recently. You can see that. There we go. This was just a very recent picture. Cars blocking the street. There is a hill just in front of the pickup truck there. So it is difficult to see cars coming from the other direction. The contention that they will have everyone drive all the way to the house is not taking place. If they did that, that would make the dogs getting out more prominent, would be a bigger problem, because then as soon as the gate opens to allow the car in, any dogs that are in the field could escape. So you can't really do both. All dogs are leashed, and they can't get out if the cars are driving down the driveway. So they're mutually exclusive. There's a photograph of fairly large number of dogs. Can't really count them, but I have seen far more than 10 dogs on the property at once. So the contention that it will never be more than 10 dogs is not true. So due to the negative impact to the neighborhood, I would request that the special use permit be denied.
I have a question for you, Mr. Gannon.
Yes, sir.
How long have you lived in your current place?
23 years.
23 years. So this has been used as a kennel for something like 10 years?
Longer than that. Frankly, with the previous kennel, hardly noticed anything. They did keep the dogs well contained, never had an issue previous to Double D Ranch. But after Double D Ranch, yes, there have been issues. And we never complained to the county, but we have had to call the owners of Double D for dogs escaping, noise complaints.
Okay. So Double D has been there for about how long?
5 years.
Okay. And so you've lived with problems for 5 years but have not complained?
Not to the county, no.
Thank you. That's all I had. Anybody else have a question?
Thank you.
Anyone else would like to speak in opposition?
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you too, sir.
My name is Randy Morley.
Could you sign in, please?
I did not. In fact, when I was back there, I was reminding myself I better sign in. The last thing I did.
We both have lapses on that subject.
The older I get, the more common those lapses become. I've lived in my property since 1996. You had mentioned or had asked a question of, I think, Deanna about the real estate agents letting it, and her hearing more and more that they have not disclosed certain things that they should have. That saddens me because I am a real estate agent. I have been a broker for over 30 years. I have served the RSC, the Realtor Services Corporation, of our local board for over 20 years of that period of time. And so my goal is always to make sure that the client is as aware as they can be of everything. So if she was unaware, or if they were unaware that it did not have the proper zoning to allow a kennel, that saddens me. And if their agent knew that that was a material item that they were requesting and requiring, and I would say that there is possibly some liability there because that agent did not do his job. Now, if they did not tell him that that was something they were interested in, then it becomes more of a gray area. Living there since 1996, I've seen several people come and go. The people prior to Double D had golden retrievers. I was not aware that they were ever boarding animals for anybody. They did raise goldens, so from time to time you'd see a litter of puppies bounding around the neighborhood, you know, and their animals were really pretty docile and pretty quiet. That has not been the case here. I have seen upwards of 18 animals on the property at any one time, and I have to say animals because I'm not differentiating which ones belong personally to Double D and which ones are someone else's. Okay, but I have counted up to 18. There were about 10 this last holiday season that I noticed that were out there. They are not always quiet. They stated that, I think her attorney stated that the biting at the fence had been remediated. Well, that had nothing to do with anything on their part. They did nothing to remediate anything. I've got a horse pasture that goes along the west side of my property, which would be just to the east side of theirs, and then along the north side. And I'm cross-fenced to keep my animals inside of that cross-fence and out of the horse area. One day, that gate had been left open, and I wasn't out there. The gate had been left open over there. I've got no horses. Dante, my German Shepherd, had gotten out, and he was still on my property. I'm cross-fenced. He hadn't gone anywhere. The dogs were biting at each other through the fence, and Dodd, Deanna's husband or the other party that lives there, is out cursing and yelling at my dog to go home. There were some words spoken because my dog was home. You know, he was on my property. They've never made any attempt to put a double fence in there to alleviate the issue, anything like that. It's always been expected that I would take that 3-acre buffer that I've got back there and just keep my dogs off of that. That's incumbent upon me. It's not incumbent upon them. You know, it has been kind of the attitude that I've heard. Yes, the value of the if a special use permit is granted in order for them to have a kennel, I could see that increasing the value of their property. They could market to a little bit wider group of people, but it does nothing to increase the value of my property. In fact, it decreases the value of mine because more people will not want to live next door to an active boarding kennel than will want to. That's not a fear, it's not a speculation, it's a fact. I mean, if somebody can buy a property that's in Black Forest that's gonna be quiet, or buy mine because I'm right next door to a boarding kennel now where there's no guarantee of that quietness, they're gonna go after the other property. And that goes for everybody that surrounds them. You know, I personally find it interesting that not one letter of support came from any properties that directly surround this property. They're the ones that are going to be impacted by this. You know, the support that I've heard has been from customers that like the way they do business, and I think they probably do a great business. I think they're great with the dogs, that kind of thing. But as far as being neighbors, good neighbors, so to speak, yeah, dropping the F-bomb, telling a GD dog to shut the F up, well, I'm sorry, that's not exactly my idea of being a good neighbor, where my grandchildren out in the backyard can hear this and then come inside later and use that language, and I get to explain why that's not acceptable. You know, so at any rate, these are the effects that it has on the neighborhood. Nobody has complained because, as you said, Black Forest people are kind of a different kind of breed. You know, we want to live our life the way we want to live our life, and we are willing to let our neighbor live their life the way they want to live theirs. And we try not to create neighborhood feuds by calling in to the county or to the sheriff's department or getting everybody else involved. We would much rather try to deal with things one-on-one between neighbors, because that's what neighbors do. So no, we did not start complaining until we heard that they wanted to legally put in a special use permit for an animal, for a kennel. So I think that concludes what I have to say, but I do hope that you would take my words into consideration. I think you're sitting on a letter up there that I wrote upon my initial knowledge that they were applying for this. Thank you very much for your time.
Well, thank you. Is there anyone else who would like to speak in opposition? Please come forward and sign in.
My name's Dave Haney, and I live on the property across from them. I live in the very back of the property, so I don't have to deal with the barking. My wife has heard it one time where they were yelling at the dogs. So the problems that the Morleys and Ed has and the Hohags behind are not my problem because I'm so far away, but I wouldn't want to live in their houses with 10 or 15 dogs out in that field barking, because once one starts, they all start going off. My problem, and the letter you'll see on in the file that I wrote, had to do with parking, and the road that Arrowhead is a roller coaster type road. And so when we are coming headed west on Arrowhead and there's a customer of theirs in front of us and all of a sudden they stop, then we have to go out into oncoming traffic because I can't see over the hill, the next hill that's right in front of it. And where Ed showed those two pictures of the cars parked, if you're behind those two cars, you can't even see a car coming because of the roller coaster hill there. And so I have to pull out into the oncoming traffic lane to get to my driveway. And my kids have almost been hit numerous times. And for the last 5 years, to be honest with you, they've been telling me I'd have called the county and complained. But we have not done that. And in my letter also, I stated that there was a previous kennel. Well, I've lived on my property for 30 years, and I've seen them come and go, and I was good friends with the people that owned the house before them. They moved over to Montrose, and when MARTA found out that they were applying for a special permit and saw my letter online, not for or against, but as far as off-road parking, she responded to me, and I just want to set the record straight because I really am not opposed, but she sent a letter to me and it says, I don't know how or why they thought they could expand a commercial kennel operation. Geez, we only took friends' goldens and puppies we yelped. I did it more for the dogs than us. So she had no intention. She did not run a commercial kennel. And, you know, they're making it out that Marta was running a full-blown kennel. And as you've heard from Ed and Morley, you know, when she ran it, we hardly had any traffic. The gate was always open, so people that ever, when they ever came, they would pull in. Now they've always got the gate shut. There's generally a car parked there, so the people have to park on the road. And the picture that Ed showed you, that the car that was in the driveway was their car, and then the customers have to park on the road, and it puts me at a risk to pull out into unknown traffic. And the also the other thing I brought up was that that road is frequently used by high school students who are trying to get around the buses that are stopping all along Old Ranch and Milam. And so they come flying through there, and then all of a sudden we're exposed even worse. So I'm not opposed to the kennel per se, but I would like to see off-road parking totally where they have to pull in. I walked down there 2 days ago to see if they had done anything before this meeting, and they've done nothing. Basically, if the gate is open, the dogs can run loose. So they don't have it set up so that people can pull in, pull down like the previous owners, down by the house, unload their dogs, because they're using that as the field. And if they open that gate, off go the dogs. So, you know, it is frustrating for the neighborhood, but, you know, we've dealt with it for 5 years as far as the traffic in the road. So, whatever. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else who would like to speak in opposition? Hearing none, if you would like to come forward and give a rebuttal or deal with any of the issues that have been raised.
One of the issues was the, I believe Commissioner Dillon mentioned, how do you deal with the 5 dogs that she owns and the 10 dogs that the kennel is allowed? What if we were to say that there are no more than 10 client dogs with a maximum of, or 10 dogs with a kennel with a maximum of 14 dogs on premises at any one time? So that means that she can only accept 9 client dogs until the old dog passes away. So maximum 14 dogs. Deanna is fine with that. Yes. And then that would accomplish the request for the 10 client dogs.
Yes, Ms. Dillon.
Essentially, that's what our condition, the way it is right now, says, that there would be 10, only allowed 10 kennel dogs, and the county only allows 4 owned dogs. So essentially, that's what we're saying right
okay.
now.
Okay.
We need to
just
leave,
to make,
it, leave
to make it,
like it
clear.
Is.
Yeah, maximum of 14 dogs, including the applicant's dog.
But we're not saying that.
Okay.
But
all right. If you're, I don't want to confuse things.
That's fine. I think we're in agreement in terms of what the meaning will be. But go ahead and proceed.
All right. Thank you. Again, there were a couple of themes. The parking on the street is obviously of concern to the neighbors. Right now, the doors or the gate, the front driveway gate is open between the hours, I think, of 7 and 8 and then 4 to 5. At any time that the gate is open, the dogs are all locked in the dog room or they're in a kenneled area so that they aren't going to be bounding out and running away. So if there continues to be problems, I encourage the neighbors to go over and talk to their neighbors. Again, we didn't hear of these complaints about the parking on the street until this application was filed. But they're more than willing to work with the neighbors to make sure that that does not remain or become a problem.
Ms. Dillon has a question for you.
You say your gate is open from 7 to 8 and 4 to 5. Is that
our drop-off hours, like your daycare
here you come up.
Our drop-off hours are from 7 to 8 a.m. Every day. And our pickup hours are from 5 to 6. So it's just a one-hour window.
And that is the only
yes.
time anyone's dropping off
yes.
or picking up?
Yes. I mean, unless they're I guess if somebody had a dire family emergency, we would work with them. But yes, for drop-offs and pickups, we have a one-hour time frame, 7 to 8 and 5 to 6.
Okay, and when did you start leaving your gate open?
When we heard that there was parking issues, that we were not, again, if somebody would have told us, we would have addressed it sooner. But as soon as we heard that this was an issue about coming into, you know, oncoming traffic and et cetera, we installed a new policy, and our clients now drive down all the way down the driveway to the house. We bring their dogs out to them on a leash, put them in their car, and they pull out. Otherwise, the gates are closed. 8 a.m., they're closed. And after, as soon as the last pickup's done for the day, they're also closed.
Okay, because one of the people who spoke said that in the last 2 days they have gone by there.
We haven't even, we've been closed the past 3 days.
With cars parked there.
Yeah, well, we've been closed the past 3 days for drop-off and pickups. With holidays, we only had 4 dogs over Christmas time. Today was the first day of daycare, being Tuesday, so...
Thank you. Anything else?
Yes. There was an issue of Mr. Morley and his dogs getting riled up, or our dogs, the applicant's dogs, getting riled up and having the fence fight and things, and that that the applicant did nothing over the last 3 years. And from what I understand, there has not ever been a fence fight since then. The dogs probably bark at each other. I believe Mr. Morley has 2 dogs of his own, and then there's a number of guest dogs. But if it's an issue of putting up a secondary fence so there is no access between the two properties, then my clients are willing to do that. I don't know if it needs to be a condition of approval or anything, but that's something that Deanna Brecky is willing to do. The third issue is with Mr. Gannon's complaints. Too many dogs. He showed some photos of the parked cars in front of the driveway. I couldn't find a date on that. He alluded to it being a recent thing. Again, not until the anonymous complaint was called in to the county did Double D Ranch know that there was a parking on the street issue of concern to the neighbors. That has now been rectified. If the special use application is approved, then there's a mechanism for the neighbors to call in to the county and say they're in violation of their special use permit. So that should give them some solace that they do have a mechanism if they decide that they don't want to talk directly to their neighbors. There were allegations that the dogs are not supervised or getting out, that Mr. Gannon has contacted them directly, that Dot Johnson curses, you know, and with foul language. We'll obviously work on the foul language issue and make sure that that's stopped immediately if it is an issue. But Deanna can attest that the Gannons have not contacted her recently about dogs being gone or dogs being over at their house or anything else. So there is a bit, if you haven't detected, there's a bit of a neighborhood dispute over this dog operation and some competition with a neighbor who was starting their own dog kennel business. And we think that has kind of fomented the issues and the complaints that we're hearing now.
Yes, Mr. I don't remember anything being said about competition with a dog kennel.
Well, I'm just giving you some background because that's what we're hearing from some of the opposition and some of the letters. We have some evidence that there was a neighbor who was advertising a dog business. There was a falling out among the neighbors, including the Double D Ranch, and that's where we believe this complaint started. That's not to say that they want to be in compliance and that they ought to be in compliance, and that's why they're going through the special use request. But the genesis of this issue is a distasteful neighborhood issue that I didn't really want to bring up because it's not really an issue. But
well, the thing is, I think it would have been more appropriate to bring that up before the neighbors had a chance to come up and give their their opinions.
I was trying to keep it at a high level.
Okay, I know, but bringing it in now, I don't know if that's necessarily appropriate because undermined their ability to respond to it.
Okay. Thank you.
If I could further up with another question, because kind of in the same vein, you have a pencil drawing or a hand drawing of the property and the distances from the property lines.
Right.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but Nina, I think that's in direct conflict with what you showed as far as the location of the property lines. You're showing the house in the exact center of the property on the pencil drawing, but I think if you look at the overlay, I don't think that's accurate. And I'm just curious. There's a follow-up to this, but I'd like to just verify the dimensions that you're using to show the locations of all the buildings versus what we have on record with the county.
Nina Reese with Planning and Community Development. There have been several different versions of the site plan from the initial application until the final, most recent version today. So I think what she had up was maybe the...
It was an old one?
Yeah. And I'll actually, if it's okay, I'm going to use the computer. Can I get the... Thank you. And I'm going to go onto our website. So this is our EDAR website that I think you guys are very familiar with. Oh, where's the rest of the stuff? Let me log in.
If I can, Nina, this is the point I wanted to bring up. On this, the house is 60 feet from the east border, but what's been submitted is that the house is 180 feet from the east border.
Correct.
The shop is 128 feet from the south border, but on here it's 180 feet and only 65 feet from the east border versus, I can't tell if it's 110. But I guess the point I'm trying to make here is that the pencil drawing was written to me in a way to give the impression that that the facilities were more centrally located on the property and farther away from the neighbors when in actuality they're not. That if you look at the home, you look at the shop, it's very close to the east side. It's not centered on this at all. And I'm just curious as to why we were given a document to give us the impression that all of these things were centrally located when they're actually not.
So the site plan was revised last week. Sorry about that. That's gross. The site plan was revised last week with Dodd. I don't know. Did Dodd not communicate with you? Okay. With Dodd, who is a partner in the business. So our most recent version of the site plan is the one that's before you on the screen right here. And this is an accurate depiction. You can compare it to the aerial.
I trust this one that's up.
Right. Yes. So this is the one that will be on file with the special use application as their final version. There have been several different versions of the site plan.
Okay. I was just curious if there was an answer as to why, when this initially was filed, why the attempt to give the impression that the buildings were in the exact center of the property, why that was done versus where they're actually located on the property.
And that I'm not sure of. I know that when people aren't really familiar with drawing up site plans, usually the first few versions that we get tend to be inaccurate, not because I think that they're trying to be deceptive. It's just because they've never drawn a site plan before and they don't know.
Okay, thank you. Thanks, Nina.
I would like to point out to Mr. Mastin that this is not to scale. The 150 is quite a bit further than the 140. So,
and
just this, to throw that caution up for you.
And having been out there, you know, and actually, quite honestly, having had to draw one for my own special use application in the Black Forest, it's not an easy task when you don't have a CAD sure. or architectural sure. or anything else. And so I think they were doing the best that they could. There was no intent to deceive that it was right in the middle. All I can say is that it is open to the east. There's a meadow between their house and the Morleys. And it's fenced, obviously, and then surrounding the north and the west side is more heavily treed, as shown as in the aerial. So, I apologize if there was, an error in the measurements, but it is very difficult when you aren't a planner or CAD drawer. We're requesting the special use that the application be approved. This provides the neighbors with a right to call and voice their concerns to the county if it's approved. If there's more than 14 dogs on the property at one time, the applicant has shown that they are in compliance with the master plan, the Black Forest small area plan, and we ask that you recommend that this be approved. Thank you.
Thank you. I have one question for Nina.
Yes, sir.
And we may have more for you. The one question I have, Nina, is let's say that we recommend approval and the county commissioners also vote for approval. And the complaints we have heard today, would those be considered to be in violation of the special use?
The complaints regarding the parking situation?
Of the parking situation and dogs running on the loose and neighbors having noise problems and all those, would those all be unacceptable in terms of the special use rules?
They would be. So if the special use is approved, then they have to complete a site development plan. And with that site development plan, they're going to have to demonstrate that there's adequate parking on site. So if they choose to keep opening the gate and then closing the gate and have that be their mechanism, that's fine. But if we receive a complaint that that's not happening, then they would be in violation. if we receive complaints that they have 17 dogs on site and we're able to verify that complaint, then that would be in violation as well. And then if the dogs habitually get out and their letter of intent says that they keep all of the dogs on the property, then that could also be a violation. So if we receive complaints and we're able to verify that they're in violation, then the applicant would be able to either amend their special use approval, so that would be another hearing, most likely, to amend that approval. Let's say they want 17 dogs versus 10. Or we could revoke their special use approval, so we would schedule a hearing before the Board of County Commissioners to revoke their special use, and the Board of County Commissioners could revoke it at that time.
That was my question. Thank you. Did you have others?
That was my question. Thank you.
Okay. Are there any other questions for Nina? Hearing none, I'm ready to hear a motion. I mean, gee whiz, people, that's why we get the big bucks to handle these things.
The big bucks.
Sure, we can discuss.
And part of this, just to say kind of what I'm thinking out loud and see what other commissioners are thinking. When it comes to our approval analysis here, our approval criteria, I think generally we are consistent with the master plan. I don't think that's a big problem. I think overall the applicant seems to be making appropriate attempts to comply with all laws. My biggest issue right now is the harmony with the character of the neighborhood. Because while personally I'm a dog person, I love dogs, I love the idea of what you're doing, your neighbors don't. So and that's been pretty clear. So there's not a lot of harmony from what we're hearing. And that's my sticking point right now. So I'm wavering. I'm a big fan of personal property rights as well. And so that's the other thing I'm weighing in here. So.
Yes, Mr. Mastin.
I'm on the side of Mr. Joy. And the thing is that I think what you're doing is great. There's no doubt in my mind that you provide a wonderful service to people with dogs. I don't doubt that one single bit. But at the same time, is part of being on this commission is to represent the people of our community, the people of our county. And that's the issue, is that your neighbors have serious issues with the way things are being done. Sorry, my phone thinks when I say Siri, yes, I'm talking to Siri. But I'm going to have to go with your neighbors on this one, simply because that their voice needs to be heard, and they need to be represented. Your neighbors have been there 18 to 20 plus years in this neighborhood. But I would love to see you find the ability to still do this somehow, because I think it's a wonderful service that you're providing, but I just want to throw that out there.
Ms. Dillon.
As I listened to people, one of the big concerns was that parking, because I understand the type of roads that you're dealing with there, the roller coaster, and how sight lines are absolutely essential. And being assured that if the parking problem continues, that would be a violation of the special use. That puts me at much more comfortable level than what it did, because now the surrounding property owners know that if they see this type of violation, they can go directly to the county and something can be done. The other thing that bothers me a whole lot is the cursing in a loud voice. I don't think property owners should be subjected to that. That's not something that evidently we can control through the special use. But I emphasize that that should stop.
Yes, Mr. Creeley.
I shall get on my horse about these issues as once again we're asked to approve a special use permit based on a code violation. It just seems like it's not, it's a hard thing. I feel like Mr. Mastin, there is no doubt in my mind either that this is a great service. But all the people who are in your corner are customers, and the people who aren't are neighbors. And with that, I will, in all likelihood, I'm certain, vote against the special use permit.
The feeling I have is a little different than the rest of my colleagues up here. I think that this would be a very viable business. The question is can it be policed? The thing that I noted is that there have been some problems now for 5 years, and we haven't heard a bit about it. And so that troubles me. So I would vote to recommend to the Board of County Commissioners that they do go ahead and approve this. But what I'm going to hear right now is a motion either to approve or deny.
I'll give it my best shot here, if I may. Considering item 4, AL 17-021, special use permit for Double B Ranch. I move for denial in accordance with page 40 of the new standard resolution with including that six conditions and three notations, and the reason for the denial is its applicability to the character of the neighborhood.
All right. Is there a second?
Second.
Mr. Mastin is seconded. Any further discussion? Let's get my right sheet of paper here. We'll go through the vote. I don't have the list. Mr. Gioia.
Can I pass?
You cannot pass.
I'm kidding.
Yes.
Before we start the vote, will you remind us how we vote on a denial?
Okay.
Because you can accidentally vote other than what you're feeling.
Right.
Okay. The motion is to deny the request. So if you vote for the motion, you are voting for denial. If you vote against it, you're saying that we'd like to go ahead. So, so this is item AL 17021 for denial. So, Mr. Gioia.
No.
Okay. Mr. Creeley.
Aye.
Mr. Mastin.
Aye.
Ms. Dillon.
Nay.
And the chair votes nay. So the motion to deny is
defeated.
You need another.
So
motion.
With that, we're going to have a motion for approval so we can pick up the conditions. And Ms. Dillon, would you do that for us?
In regard to regular item number 4, AL 17-021, special use for Double D Ranch, I move for approval according to the page 39 with six conditions and three notations.
Is there a second?
Second.
Mr. Gioia, second. We'll go through the list again. Mr. Creeley?
Nay.
Mr. Gioia?
Aye.
Mr. Mastin?
Nay.
And Ms. Dillon?
Aye. Yay.
Yay. And Mr. and I vote aye. So the motion is approved 3-2. Thank you very much, and the meeting is closed.